Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is April 13th, 2017. It's a Thursday. It is 8:30 p.m. This is the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District. The Board of Commissioners convenes as the 4-H Extension District occasionally, as we are the designated governing body for that. We only have two items on the agenda this morning and a full board present. We are going to appoint a member of the District Budget Committee as we're starting the budget process, and Mr. Punches is the director of that. And so do you want to come forward and kind of talk about how we work through this process?
Sure.
And that we basically have a balance of private sector members for any public body.
Yes.
And the governing board and going through the budget process. And we've got a slot open and a qualified person to fill it. So
you do, and I think you've covered all the bases. So John Punches with Extension Service, and I serve in a volunteer role as the budget officer for the Extension District.
Great.
And we are indeed filling a vacant position on the Budget Committee, which consists of the three sitting commissioners plus three appointed members. They're on three-year staggered terms, so we have typically a person who rotates in each year. They can serve two consecutive three-year terms. Now, Johnny Anderson has served for many years. She actually was off for a little while and back on, so she's served for many years, and she rotated off, and Ms. Anderson is willing to step in and take that role.
Great.
She'll be wonderful.
Great. Do we have a budget calendar yet of when we're trying to meet? We were just discussing in previous... Oh, dear.
I believe.
Did yours just be told to restart as well?
Yeah.
Yes, that's that security thing they emailed about yesterday.
Shouldn't have discretion to do it whenever it wants. That's not
true.
Fair.
Yeah, mine just restarted a minute ago.
And this isn't going to do anything.
And just did it again.
No,
it's stuck.
Oh, mine. Huh. Okay.
Mine doesn't.
Well, look at you.
Wait till you
That's
have the
awesome.
Pop-up screen.
It'll, yeah, all right. Knock on wood. You're next, Tiger.
I'm glad I got this far.
Have you had it already? Has it blewed out?
No, I downloaded it.
Oh, it's
it.
Coming.
I just got the...
It's coming, my friend. So if you
in answer to your question, the Josephine County Budget Committee meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, May 17th at 2 p.m. here in this room. And that should already be on your calendars. I've scheduled that with staff. And the budget hearing and adoption is scheduled for Wednesday, June 7th at 2 p.m. here
you
in this room.
Worked with our staff to get
yep.
those dates because
those
they
dates
sound good.
Yep, those dates are set and should be on your calendars.
Great. So I have a resolution, 2017-024, happen to you too?
Yes.
For the 4-H, it's in the matter of appointments to the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District Budget Committee, and it reads, whereas it has come to the attention of the Board of County Commissioners, should be acting as the governing body of the 4-H Extension Service District, that as of April 28th, 2017, there will be a vacancy on the District's Budget Committee, and whereas it is both proper and necessary that the governing body of the district fill said vacancy by making an appointment as provided herein, now therefore be it resolved that the following person is appointed to the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District Budget Committee with a term as herein after set forth. Cindy Andres is appointed to a term beginning April 29th, 2017 and expiring June 30th, 2019. And it's interesting that it has a date after.
Yeah, so let me
the
explain that.
The
so the current term for Ms. Anderson runs through, it was April 28th of this year. So we won't be doing our budget meeting until after that.
Okay.
And what we had done, we started this last year, is putting people onto terms that end on June 30th, which stays then in cycle with the budget cycle.
So, okay.
So we'll do
right.
one more of these. It'll have kind of a weird term. And after that,
they'll
it'll
all
be July 1 and June 30, and it'll fit with the normal budget.
Correction.
Yeah. And it just always been that way
yeah.
because when we did the first paperwork to start up the committee, we did it on April 29th or whatever, and those terms always ran that way. And then we later on got to thinking, that's kind of strange because it's
we're gonna have
cycle
to take a look at
with the budget
our
process.
Budget committee appointees.
Yeah.
And I think they are appointed. Like
most are appointed to match the budget cycle.
Yeah.
So that's what we're
seems very smart,
to.
Mr. Punches. Very good. So
I think it was something that Arthur suggested.
Oh.
So
well,
yeah.
hopefully.
So
yeah.
We're probably smart.
Well, good. So I'd entertain a motion from the board if so desired to approve resolution 2017-024 in the matter of appointment to Ms. Andres to the Budget Committee, 4-H Extension Service District Budget Committee.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Thank you for being willing.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. But I know the pay is extensive and the overtime benefits and healthcare.
Yeah,
volunteer. It all comes around. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries 3-0. And so if that's done, we have another issue concerning 4-H extension here in Josephine County and the need to extend a lease agreement with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments as a utilizer of the site of the 4-H Extension Service District on the fairgrounds property. They operate the Food and Friends program out of that. We've had this discussion before. This amendment number 2 has been prepared by legal and signed off by Mr. Cavallaro, the director of the RVCOG, and it's to extend, not to change any of the elements other than to extend the month-to-month lease that they have right now and make it a formal lease agreement to the end of the calendar year. You might remember that their goal is to move into a new facility. There's extensive grant requirements with receiving these federal funds through the CBDG Community Development Block Grant, and their timeline was 18 months. But I think we can try to work with Mr. Cavallaro in that year time frame, that maybe it's not 100% ready for everything in 18 months, but at least they can be operating the Food and Friends food delivery and food service element out of there and before the end of the calendar year. We can always go month to month after this, but I really wanted, I think the board wanted, the idea of kind of holding this carrot or stick out there that yesterday would have been great, tomorrow's even better, but 18 months from now is going to be too long. So
I think that was the intention of the board, is to make sure that there was a line in the sand, but at least, you know, move that, get them moving that. And then I guess it, they come in on a month-to-month, say, you know, we'll be getting a monthly progress report as to, you know, what the hang-ups are. If there's any hang-ups that we can help with, we'll be sure to do that.
Yeah.
Just bring it back to our attention every month after that.
I think our goal is for a team effort to provide emphasis and whatever encouragement to get it done. I know that the passing of Ms. Foley is going to potentially impact that project, but I guess through the staff and maybe Mr. Punches, that there is somebody at the COG who understands CBD to granting, because that's a huge portion of their funding, and it can be a real impediment if you don't do it right. So I followed tangentially the project. The last major CDBG project we had in the county was the Kirby Water District, and that was a $2 million grant, I think, and it lasted 9 years. We don't want that duration of time for this project at all. It's already been 9 years, so.
And I think putting a little pressure on them, first off, I think one of the big obstacles they have up there is that parking lot and stormwater and things of that sort. And you're not going to come in here in between Christmas and New Year's and do that, because it's just not good to put down pavement and things of that type in the middle of winter time. So maybe they could put the squeeze on them to get it done this summer rather than next summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 18 months was designed so they could pull in next summer to finish off early. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could bump that up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I know that when we talked to them, there were elements that could be done in parallel. It wasn't like a linear deal, and they were working on those. What are those things that can go in tandem? So without objection, I'd entertain a motion to approve amendment number 2 to the intergovernmental agreement between Rogue Valley Council of Governments and the Josephine County 4-H Extension Service District for leasing of property off of Ringgit there at the fairgrounds, and extending the lease agreement to the end of December 2017.
I'll move that, make that motion.
I'll second it.
Moving seconded. Any further discussion?
Mr. Punches, are there any things pending with you guys that this will keep you from being able to do?
So I think that we have been now for many, many years finding ways to work around the fact that they're occupying part of that space. And so we have workaround answers to doing our programming, to finding spaces to do things. To some extent, we do limit our use of the building because they're there at times. Some of that just is a scheduling issue. Some of it just means that there's certain programs that we probably would do more of, but we just can't with the capacity we have there. But we will continue to work with them. They have a very valuable program for our community and our seniors, and we want to continue to be a good neighbor with them. So we'll continue to make those accommodations, but it will be very helpful when we get that space back. It will allow us to do more of our services for the community and ramp those up.
I guess my only question with that, or not question so much as comment, is if there are some things coming up that you guys need more space, will you reach out to us
Absolutely.
To see if it's something
yeah.
we can accommodate
yeah.
another way?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We don't want to be impeding what you guys mm-hmm. are about. Matter of fact, I probably every other day I'm talking about how do we get to expand OSU Extension in our community. And I'm not kidding. I had that conversation yesterday a couple times.
Great.
And one was with RCC and just kind of, I think that there's more, when I see what OSU Extension is doing on the state, mm-hmm. we can do more.
Yeah.
And when we look at our needs in our community for building our workforce and getting our kids through school, I think you guys may be key to that.
We have programs that help in those areas.
So that's, I want to make sure that we're partnering as best we can to make sure that we are mm-hmm. utilizing every service we can.
Great, thank you for the support.
There's a developing potential partnership with RCC and the Small Business Development Center that you guys might want to be tied into a little bit in that discussion with the schools.
At least be at the table.
Yeah.
They do connect in a lot of different.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about doing an innovation center, and I think that would be right up your alley, especially
yeah.
after hearing about the WAVE program at the CEO, you know, the engineering,
yeah.
and you know, it's like
robotics.
Yeah, this would be something y'all would find interesting.
Okay. I would even see the shooting program. We're like under the radar, but there's a lot of firearm development. You know, that happens with Nebeski here, and then there's that other company
yeah,
that's down over there.
Yeah.
One in Merlin also that makes a tremendous amount of firearms parts for the military. And
wow.
These are, and they purposely
yeah, yeah.
fly
they're not
on the ground, you know?
Right.
And, which is fine, you know, because we sort of
try to think of another community with that kind of. I mean, they do fly under the radar, but I don't know of one.
Yeah.
Even in the Northwest, I bet. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that could be a real interesting nexus. So we'll get this signed. So that's the expectation, so that you're in the loop on that.
Does the extension serve, do you have anything to do with SoReady? I mean, do you ever represent any of those SoReady meetings at all?
Probably not on a consistent basis.
Okay.
So my various faculty members have at times interacted with them. We're not tied directly into
that. One of the things, I attended a meeting over in Medford the other day, and everybody around the table was asked, oh, you know, how's everything going? And everybody was crowing about all the good things about their little town and their Rogue Valley and their little demographic. I got three, and I said, I don't want to talk about it. I already know what pluses are around here. But you just say, when you bring a huge company in here and they're looking for land, they're looking for this, they're looking for that, and then, something goes haywire, they get on the plane and they fly away and never come back. I want to know why they left.
Yeah.
I want to know what their hurdles are that we can correct those issues that they may have. You know, maybe it's, you know, I went to go to the assessor's office and I got off the bus and I had to walk through the gauntlet down here to get to the assessor. I said, no, hon, we're out of here. You know, what is that to turn them away? I want the negatives to come out. So I've been asked if the next SoReady meeting to do a presentation on just that, because I think you're overlooking the obvious. It's
right.
always something that they don't like. You know, I don't like the cabinets. You know, where's the objection to not buying the house?
Mm-hmm.
And if I can feel that objection, then I'm
yeah.
going to sell. And we're not looking at the objections. We're always looking at, boy, this is what we've got. This is what we've got. Yeah, but, you know, I had to walk through broken glass to get here, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to subject my family and my employees to that. So that's, I think we need to shift our thinking
focus
a little bit. My frustration with economic development, my frustration with SoReady has been, I guess, that. So now I'm going to get an opportunity to
removing those impediments to
exactly.
get business to either stay here or
move.
Yeah.
You were excited about coming to Grand Island.
Yeah.
You loved it. You said, "Oh yeah, we played soccer," or my son was in a softball tournament out here at U.S. Cellular Field. A great deal. And any other guy gave a 15-minute deal on how great U.S. Cellular Field was, and I grant it, beautiful.
Yeah.
But then what happened? Maybe they were in town at a pizza parlor or something and got mugged. I don't know what it is. But something obviously said, "I'm not going there for this reason." And we don't ever explore those reasons. I don't think we ever bring them up into the light of day to see how, as a region, we can correct the things that send people away. And so that's where I think I'm going to go. We might turn that corner.
If you find in that some of those impediments are educational needs, that go beyond something that RCC would handle for workforce training or something like that,
right,
give me a holler, because obviously OSU has lots of resources through our eCampus and through our professional community education unit
and
address those. And the professional unit in particular, if companies have specific training needs that they can't find here locally, we can probably develop a program to meet those needs
that we
can do through distance or in combination with extensions.
That's exactly some of the things that I thought of.
And Lily she's cutting edge. She's the point of the spear on extension. And that's why I just wonder if we can all work together and figure
out
that. One of the things that I Sheriff and I were coming into town last night after a seminar, or a forum, I guess you call it. And he says, "Well, what are some of the bad things?" Like, we just drove by one. And he goes, "What?" And I says, "The hospital." I said, "You talk to anybody and say, 'Well, if you had a heart attack, where would you go?' 'I'm not going here, I'm going to Medford." Well, then say, "Well, then so am I, and I'm taking my company with me." And so that's the thing, you know, there's some obligation from a lot of partners and a lot of players on this thing. So, you know, do we pressure Asante to say, "Hey, let's get this thing, step it up. Let's, you know, you got a beautiful facility. Now let's move that your staffing meets the expectation for what the building looks like, and go from there." So, I didn't mean to get off track, but I think it's important that you maybe want to be in the room. So I just want to know if I can call on you if you wants to have a presentation at some point in time about extension.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think bigger than just extension, because it's all of the things that OSU does under our division of outreach and engagement.
Sure.
That it's those things that I think are really valuable to them.
So Ready isn't necessarily going to want to know about the farming and the stuff to the schools.
Right.
They want to see what other things does extension offer that we can partner with.
Yep, be happy to do that.
So I think
one of the obstacles that they do have is the labor pool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the education part comes in, you know, that it's just one more. So we'll see how it goes on that. Okay.
Yeah.
So call the question.
Sure. I thought we did. No, we didn't. We're on discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0. Anything else that we need to discuss while we're before each extension service?
I am working with Pat and Legal on getting an update to the agreement between OSU and the district to provide extension services here. Ours is actually technically expired, but we're just kind of continuing to do the same thing. And so she's got an updated version of that with all of my comments in it.
Okay.
So that's on her desk. And I know she's very busy, so I haven't bugged her about it, but I'll probably...
Well, squeaky wheel gets the grease, and they're used to being bugged, so it's really not a big a deal.
Well,
give it a couple weeks if we can, and then revisit.
Yeah, I think it's been two and a half weeks, and so I was thinking next week
that's
I'll give
not
her a call.
So if it's 2.5 months, then you need to start.
We're not quite as fast as DMV, but we're working on it.
So that's on the latest version. The original version's been 2.5 years.
Yeah, right.
So it has been there a while.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, we'll get her done.
That's nice.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, let's try to get that concluded as the fiscal year concludes. So our goal to have that, is it an IGA?
Yeah.
Yep. IGA completed by the end of June.
Good.
We should probably have that on the agenda for approval. Is extensions district needs to do it?
The district needs to do it, so we could work that into
the
hearing and adoption and just put that in there.
That would be great.
Okay, I'll mention that to her.
Maybe follow up with her and say that's the expectation.
Okay.
Maybe in 7.
That would be great.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much.
The agenda's a little strange, saying that number two, we convene as the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, but that's not true. We're not going to do that.
That's only if you wanted a short
thank you session.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations for our appreciation for signing up. Thank you very much.
Or condolences.
So do we need to convene as the Josephine County Board of Commissioners or just wait till the 9 o'clock cabinet meeting?
Or convene and then adjourn?
We can adjourn as the 4-H extension. I guess they just put it in as a placeholder if we got done early and wanted to talk about county business. But, I think we're going to have plenty of time at 9 o'clock. The timber sale is going on.
Okay.
It's 9 o'clock. So all they're doing, we've got sealed bids and they're opening back. They're opening up. That's all it is. So.
I have something. I don't know if it's proper time.
Well, we don't want to talk about anything that isn't 4-H business right now.
Okay, no, this is.
So let's just adjourn and we'll come in 9 minutes.
All right.
I'll meet you back here. Okay. Nothing further. The 4-H Extension Service District is adjourned at 8:51.
It is 9 o'clock on, what day are we on? Thursday, April 13th. It is the administrative session. We're going to be beginning with the legal update council, and the first item is a letter regarding funding and state prosecutions. Our full board is here today, though Mr. Hare will be joining us in just a moment, and so we'll turn this over to you.
So after Tuesday afternoon's meeting, I attempted to amend, I guess, or fix the letter to the board's to accommodate the board's recommended edits, and that has been principally done by adding a paragraph, which is now the third paragraph. And so, if everyone has a chance to review the letter, they can find out.
Yes.
9 o'clock.
We started at 9 o'clock.
And here I can, for convenience sake, give you a copy of the letter.
Okay.
In that case, I'll take this back and.
Bring me up to speed on what happens in a minute.
He's asking us to review the letter, as specifically the third paragraph has been edited.
And yes, been created even. So.
It's different than what was in the packet?
This was in today's packet,
yeah,
from my understanding. So, yes.
That's different than what's in the packet?
Which packet? Last week, last Tuesday's or today's?
Today's packet.
You have the most current one in the packet.
Right, right, yes. Different from Tuesday's letter. So.
Does the state have to be capitalized as it's referring technically to Oregon State in the third paragraph? Or the lowercase suggests that it's a generic state versus uppercase in that case?
Oh, I don't know. That
referring to Oregon State, Oregon's missing, but it's the state, so therefore.
I think you can go either way. It's,
okay.
If it's distractive, we can capitalize.
I just want to make sure that we're not offensive.
Where?
The previous page.
Oh, previous page. Sure.
The second word of the third paragraph. I could be wrong. I'm not the English person.
I don't know that it makes any difference. I'll capitalize it. Happy to.
If we have the courts, public defense, and corrections all capitalized. I just want to make sure we're consistent with honoring the state as the state kind of thing.
There's a lot of states in that paragraph.
Whatever it needs to be, I'm just asking the question. I could be wrong. Absolutely.
Yes.
I had some corrections on paragraph one and some additions on paragraph two. So, are we ready to do those? Okay. In the last sentence of the first paragraph, as of July 1st, 2017, the state will be solely responsible for prosecuting its cases in this venue. It's always been responsible and solely responsible for prosecuting these cases. The county doesn't do any of that. It's really the funding element for prosecution, so I just thought if we could include funding prosecution, as of July 1st, 2017, the state will be solely responsible for funding prosecution in cases in this venue.
Okay.
Really the funding element. And then the second paragraph, if that's okay with no objection, in the second paragraph, it's really not so much, I mean, the number of deputies and support personnel is important, but what the state needs to be focused on, what I think we should be focused on, is not the number of staff or personnel, it's the number of cases that they file. And so I asked for last year's budget presentation by the district attorney to get some of those numbers.
Okay.
And so we can provide some of those stats that we think are most relevant to say that 1,937 criminal cases have been filed by the district attorney's office between July 1, 2015 and March 30th of 2016. Those are 1,937 cases that are not going to, ironically, 1,937 are not going to be filed in Josephine County. People who have broken state law potentially that aren't going to be prosecuted. And that's what I think the state ought to understand.
Why does he only have 9 months?
Because I think when his presentation was given last year, it obviously wasn't at the end of the fiscal year.
Got it. He hadn't increased it yet. Okay.
Well, that's the date. He gave his presentation maybe on April 1st.
Okay. I was just looking that we're a year out.
Right.
We should have a full year's
fiscal PowerPoint presentation for the budget committee. That's just one. There's 3,643 individual charges were issued in those 1,937 cases. So I think just one of those stats, just to give perspective about how many cases are not going to be done or how many individual charges couldn't be filed. Does that sound appropriate that we put that in there? In paragraph two somewhere?
Sure.
I'm just trying to see if that's the best place or if it is at the end of the paragraph one. As July 1st, state will be solely responsible for funding the prosecution of these cases.
Okay.
For last fiscal year, this is how many cases were prosecuted and the individual charges.
Yeah.
The next one goes into this is the staffing and the impact financially.
I think that's great.
Third one go into.
Okay,
stats. I think that's the
best. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we could say between July 1, 2015 and March 30, 2016, 3,643 individual charges were issued in 1,937 cases.
Kind sure, or we can even ask him for the updated full year numbers.
Okay.
For the previous fiscal year, this is what the impact was.
Okay.
They might wonder, why did you only include 9 months? When you're a year out.
Yes, okay.
It just it's an odd statistic
just
when you're a year out.
Bring it to their attention.
The next page, I'm curious about, let's see. Okay, the first, end of the first sentence. District attorney, whose position is funded by the state? It needs to be partially. Whose position is partially funded by the state?
Okay.
The next page, top of the page. We're supplement his income.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they went from paying completely for the district attorney to the last year was what, 2003, 2004, where they partially paid for deputy district attorneys. And now they're partially paying for a district attorney. So they went from fully funding the entire department, partially funding the department, to partially funding his position.
Okay.
I don't know if we make a clear enough statement that prior to that time, his department was 100% paid for by the state, including all deputy district attorneys. We say since 67 they haven't been doing it, but we're not articulating that they did have a precedence that they paid for this function.
Okay.
I don't know. Does it, is that make it confusing?
I'm trying to figure that out. I was thinking about when you pay for a meal, they're paying for the staff person. We elect to pay more.
Okay.
We have the discretion to not do that. But the position would still be funded.
Okay.
And not Mr. John Ryan
Malkins
could choose to work for the rate that the state is willing to pay. That's really up to him. That's what the position is funded at.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's really
sure.
The position is being funded and paid for by the state. We're
okay.
Electing to like almost provide a tip, a $9,000 tip, but you know, to like supplement because
mm-hmm.
we don't feel that that's an adequate salary. So I think that the language could be argued either way. Your point is absolutely valid. We all know that that's true, but it also might undermine our argument just a tad, the fact that we're we're paying for some, and what he says is not true.
Okay.
So.
Well, and that's why it's a good discussion. So, yeah, I'm fine with taking that portion out.
Okay.
But I do think even having 1967 as the last date might not be as impactful as the last date they actually paid towards the department and the deputy district attorneys was 2004. So it's not just 50 years ago. It's as early as 10 years ago. They were still paying for part of the department.
Okay. Okay, what sentence do you want in there? Could we dwell on that a little longer?
The concept that the last relevant funding element happened for the DA's office in 2004.
I believe that was last year. It was 2003, 2004. They still provided funding towards the deputy DA positions.
Okay, you want to say until 2004, the state still provided funding for deputy DA?
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Prior to 1967, they fully funded the department. They began failing to adequately cover the services, and as recently as 2004, still were contributing towards those costs.
Okay.
And the burden has been switched to the county for a state function.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably.
I think it's probably history of it is in this.
Maybe.
Cool. Mm-hmm. My dates could be wrong. I'm guesstimating 2003, 2004, but that was the
relevant date to which they funded.
Within the last 15 years.
Okay.
1967,
yes. Okay. Something that happened before I was born is not necessarily.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's not a good year. It probably was, but.
I would
be careful with that. We all need to be careful with 67. Be real careful with that.
What year did you graduate?
67.
All right.
I turned 67 and 67.
Awesome.
There we go.
Okay. Who's the liaison to
I have that privilege.
I would like to delegate you for final review and approval of that. We'll put the letter in the signature file and get it going. We had a discussion that a press release is appropriate to come with this, that you were going to.
We're going to work together.
Yeah, just making sure that we're.
I watched his notes say, work with Lily.
That we're going to, that we are not, it's not misconstrued that we have any, this isn't us being critical of the TA's services. It's the fact that we want that office funded as well as possible and really don't feel like it's our responsibility to the degree the state is trying to give it to us.
Well, the county has responsibilities and obligations for a county function, and this is a purely state function.
Yes.
So if we have to pick and choose.
Outside of our core duties. Mm-hmm. And that's just not really true. It's like in business, you go back to your core competency when you don't have all the resources you used to have. You say, how did I get chartered? Why am I here? And our charter as a county is not the DA. It really is not. So it's not a core function of county services.
That's a good point.
Part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's in there. I don't think it is.
We can put it in.
But that's the crux of it. It's not a core function of county services.
Okay.
It might be a first sentence. Okay. A conclusion.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It's a strong point to either enter with or leave with.
Yeah. The crux of it is DA is not a core function of county services. And by all the history.
Okay.
How
it is a relative and core function of the criminal justice and the system, it is not a core function of the county.
Mm-hmm.
It's still acknowledging the need of it, just not, it's not the county.
Okay.
You guys can work on it.
Something to the effect of core function.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, great. Moving on. Excellent. Thank you for this.
Mm-hmm.
That was a small task.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Anything else for you before we move on? You guys are going to be part of parks. That might be why it's on next. Typically, we would take elected officials in the assessor's office, and we have two of those sitting in the audience, so we might just do that. Are you guys part of number C1? Is this the agreement?
No, we're still on 1B, right?
They still have another matter under their agenda.
Yeah, another matter. It's the it looks to be the same, but it's actually an unrelated matter.
Okay, I assumed that we'd already done that, but okay, go ahead.
This, we did on Tuesday, and this is kind of bringing it back.
Oh, okay.
The date adjustment because the 17th, and it had to be signed before the 17th, and...
Are we taking action on this today?
Yes.
Okay, we've already discussed this, as you guys said, so I'd entertain a motion for approval of Resolution 2017-022 in the matter of transfer of child support services from District Attorney's Office to the State of Oregon. And IGA number 17364 with the Department of Justice Child Support Services.
Make a motion that 1B be approved.
And I have previously declared a potential conflict of interest.
I'll second that. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Abstain.
All those who choose to abstain or object.
Abstain.
So it passes 2-1.
So, I believe, I don't have the final of that resolution for signature.
You can put it in the
file. Okay, and then also we will also include then the IGA when for signature as well.
Is that going to be ready? That's like, is that?
It should be ready, I believe, hopefully later today.
Oh, good.
Great.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll get it signed when it's ready.
Cleared up.
Okay.
And it's going to happen on Monday.
There's some, a couple final, things that we're looking into on the IGA, but it's pretty much good to go.
Good.
I did have two things for legal, just questions. We as a board have received two emails from Mr. Hunter as far as a list of items that they're presenting to the county that they think will be helping with the criminal justice issues or public safety issues. And I don't know if you received that or not. I can forward my email to you, but I think we need to vet and look through some of them. Obviously, one of them being that the commissioners take a pay freeze for 5 years. I don't know that the amount of financial impact that would have, but I think on each of those items, it would have to be what are the steps, what's the financial impact, and... Personally, a hiring freeze doesn't actually necessarily solve public safety issues. It actually creates other issues when you have a critical function that now you can't hire because you put a hiring freeze into play.
Can we use the salary freeze that we've had prior to this year on the Board of Commissioners for the first viable term, 6 years, and say we've already done that?
Absolutely. I mean, I just think that one, we need to have a discussion. I don't know if it's a work group that we and legal sit down and have that discussion, go item by item or with finance or whoever it need to be. But
yeah,
I would like to make sure.
Is there a legal nexus or is it just a financial one? Or HR maybe?
I think there's labor issues. There's legal issues. There's financial issues. And I think that it would be appropriate for us to have a discussion to work through them and actually have a response because they're taking them to the press. They've already been bringing them up and presenting them in other venues, so I want to make sure that we actually address and respond. And we also received a letter from Kirk Brust at the courts about the plaza between the Ambassador Auditorium and our courthouse, and I wanted to know what our options are for that.
Yeah, it's county property, and I talk about once a month, it seems, with the police department, the Grants Pass Department of Public Safety, and Officer Burge is kind of the point person from that department who goes and does what is legally permissible.
He's on our nuisance enforcement team.
Yes, on a regularly routine basis.
So I was provided this by Chief Landis, and it's just an aerial delineating where there's park benches, opportunities to sit. Something that came to me, and I could almost venture to guess that there's somebody sitting on the wall that extends 200 feet in either direction. You can take out all the park benches you want. There's 200 feet of opportunity for people to sit down. You might be removing park benches and more right there on the front of the courthouse. So I'm not so sure if that does much, but I think the designation of campus as a park provides them the opportunity to trespass people who are not there for the right purposes. And so,
I attended the homeless symposium, workshop, whatever it is, over in the library the other evening. one of the two or three library employees there, and they're quite concerned because there's an awful lot of transients that sleep in the hedges behind the library, and as they're going to and from their automobiles in the evening or early morning hours, these folks are just coming and going. So with that in on, we've done that on a number of different areas around where you just remove the vegetation or trim the vegetation up so that it is not, you know, down towards the ground. It doesn't provide cover. Another thing, when you look at the benches, I know the city of Grants Pass has taken an 8-foot bench, which becomes a bed, and they put in like an armrest halfway through. It's attached to, it's like a metal armrest galvanized thing, and they attach it to the bench. It's no longer 8 feet long. Ah. Now it's only 4 feet to lie down on. It becomes a bench rather than a bed. So there's some things that can be done down there. Going back to, I was at Soretti the other day, and we were talking about impediments of what would be, you know, why aren't you here? Why does the business be here? And they're excited about Grants Pass and Josephine County, and then they leave. And you never hear why. What are we putting in their way? And I can just visualize somebody staying at the New Hampton Inn up north of town, and they say, you know what? Let's take public transportation down to the courthouse and go see the assessor and see what, you know, I want to look up this map or that map. And so public transportation drops them off right here, and they get to run that gauntlet following the signs to the assessor through our little camp down here. And if I was getting off the bus with my wife and thinking about moving my company here, I'd turn right around, get back on the bus, and I'd leave. So that right there is one more welcome mat to county government, and look what we're allowing. We're not cleaning our own porch up. And anytime anybody enters this building, they have to go by that. That's really important to me. Yes. It's outside my window, and you know those are my folks down there, but I just look at it from out-of-town eyes. What does that look like? It looks not so good.
So a couple questions that I had about it, and we might need to reschedule this for another day and have the discussion unless we want to deal with it. But one, you go by in the rain, and they're all on the steps of the ambassador. It's not just there, but I had a meeting with Assessor Connie Roche's office the other day, and it's distracting with all you're hearing is the talk outside. I don't know how she is not distracted all the time with that right outside your window. I mean, we hear it here with the distractions in the hallway, and you can hear everything. And apparently, even with our doors shut, you can hear everything we say in this conference room, which is lovely. But just being able to get business done and all that kind of stuff. It's one thing to be waiting for a bus. It's another to sit there and stay all day. And not everybody that's sitting there are the harassing ones, but there are certainly others that is where they're sleeping, living, staying every single day. There's the regulars.
So if I could interject, I think these arguments are going to, this conversation needs to probably move to a general discussion.
I think so.
We have a plan of first addressing it as maybe designating as part of the campus, mm-hmm. which gives us certain authority to be able to do some things that we can't do right now. So let's move forward with that step and answering that question. And
I'd like us to make a list to say if we're going to have that discussion of people that we think would be important to be in the room at the table.
When is the transit hub moving?
Not for years.
Okay.
And it's just a hub element. I think it was a misconception online, and maybe I perpetuated it from the idea that there wouldn't be any bus activity here. That's not true. It'll still continue to be a stop, apparently. That's the plan of the transit. They are developing a transit plane, and that could be addressed in that to maybe do some things there to improve safety first off. It's not just the congestion element, but there are some other. It would be the hub would move down. And so we're going to have to figure out, you know, I don't want to just move this problem down there to those business centers. So whatever we could work out a solution here would probably need to apply over there as well.
One of the concerns I have here is that bus stop. When the bus pulls up there, now that we're talking the long buses rather than the little shorty, we're covering two crosswalks. Yeah. Every time the bus pulls up, there's two crosswalks.
Yes.
And people get halfway across the street and go, oops, now where do I go? They're around the buses and so on and so forth. So that's an element we need to bring up.
I can see Scott needs to
be
a number of others, obviously the city, and so we'll work on putting that general discussion.
And it's an ODOT facility, so I think they should need to be on the table. Maybe they have some funding that would be available to move.
Yeah, okay.
$100,000.
In the meantime, did you need us to look in anything? Or?
My question about the designation of the campus as a park, and including the library and that.
I think the whole campus would need to be in on it.
Maybe even the bus shelter area and the parking lot. So I don't know.
Okay.
Brian would be another person we want to include in that conversation because he's pretty familiar. I mean, we had tried to make steps in putting that fence out there, but I don't want to leave with the conversation. We've got a large agenda.
Yes.
10:30. I have a 10:30 appointment. Anything else that you guys have that we need to bring out to do a whole?
That fits with my schedule.
I'm open till 11:30.
We'll get this on a general discussion real soon because I know Chief Lance is interested in it. I just received a notification. Worked it with you, but it is kind of under legal for authority. Our airport manager is going to be unavailable for a little while. Your liaison airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily appropriate that a manager delegate just anyone in their office to being the acting airport authority. And so in years past, we've delegated Mr. Brandis as public works director in that effort. And so I think it's important that the liaison work with the manager. The board has to have an understanding of how that delegation is going to be done. But a staff person in that small office is not an appropriate delegate for acting as the airport interim airport authority. And so I'm looking to you for a recommendation. Is it you? Because it certainly could be. Or is it Mr. Brandis? But you get to the fairgrounds. Manager were unavailable for a little while. There isn't anybody in the fair staffing hierarchy who has the management authority or responsibility that's not appropriate. So Rob has people in his office who we could delegate in public works. The sheriff does. The assessor does. Those other smaller offices don't. And so you need to make a recommendation of who you want to see acting interim airport director for the time that Mr.
Yeah, he's gone for a couple weeks, so I can follow up with Mr. Brandis after and talk about appropriate responses.
In my opinion, it's between you two.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with either one, just as the county understands that you're the charge.
Okay.
Okay. There are others, but we'll
get
those later.
We know where you live.
Yeah, right. Human resources, that issue's been tabled, so item 2A will be included at a different date. I'm going to move forward with the assessor's office if the parks manager will indulge for a minute. We have a tendency to take elected officials first, so if those parties would come up for item number 2C, resolution 2017-023, in the matter of participation in the assessment and taxation grant. Here we go.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning. We'll let Chris start because he's done the numbers.
Well, I have the privilege of preparing this every year. So,
great.
This is our annual request for county assessment function funding assistant grant money. And so what it is back in 89, the state recognized that there was a problem with funding assessor's offices, tax collector's offices, and came up with this idea to implement some oversight and provide funding. So the funding is provided by statewide, counties depositing, is that something your office does? Depositing delinquent interests and clerk, they charge a fee for each time a document's recorded at the clerk's office. So the recording fees, and the delinquent interest goes into a CATF fund, and we get payments out of that as long as we operate within our budget and within compliance of our state mandated functions.
So, yeah, all of the fees that we collect, the delinquent interest that is deposited through my office, we also pay that to the state quarterly so that they can give it back.
Historically, Joseph.
Yes,
we have. We're going to help you out, so we're going to garner revenue from you and then give it back.
Yeah.
And probably capture an administrative overhead on it.
They do.
They do.
A ridiculous program.
The only advantage is that
Throughout the years, we have tended to receive more back than we've gotten out, although that's starting to change because with our budget being low, the state formula has a formula that they look to, and so everybody, all 36 counties, submit their budget, and then they get a share of the receipts from that fund based on what their budget is. So if we're, and we're basically, we've been trying to really hold the line on our budget, well, other counties are increasing their budgets, and so they're taking more of that money while we're ending up with less. So every time we...
Proportionately.
Yeah.
Exactly. That little piece
right.
of the pie is getting smaller.
Because they say, the whole statewide system, there's so many dollars budgeted for assessment and taxation, and your portion of that is smaller than it used to be. So we're getting to a point where it's going to tip to where we're sending up more than we're getting just because our budget.
Legal. I wish they were still here. What are the ramifications if we didn't send that delinquent interest in those filing fees to the state? What are they going to do? Are they going to sue us? Is there a revenue stream that they do allocate that they would recapture or something? It's getting to be a point where the standard or the historic norm is not the historic norm anymore. In the state, being... what is that? Did you bring the mining money?
Yes, I did.
There's a word in there. It's their life and their duty. So mm-hmm. we're going to have to start looking at things.
Yeah.
Commissioner Morgan testified in Salem. He did a good job, from what I hear. I wasn't able to attend and representing our issues here in Josephine County, but I think there was a point that was not made, and I'm not looking to do this as an actual, but I think the state needs to understand that if the county has the choice of allocating, be it $500,000 to the assessment function that really benefits all of the other taxing districts, or $500,000 of general fund appropriation to rural patrols or the juvenile detention facility, we're going to be faced with that hard decision about where those funds go. And when I do the math about what we appreciate in increased revenues due to either assessment or just the 3% that happens regardless, we're spending $500,000 to generate $60,000 and $100,000 of additional revenue. The real beneficiary of assessment right now is that urban renewal district. That they only get their revenues, they only get their bonding capacity of $105 million if we prove that they are actually increasing their assessed values at a rate that they're going to be able to sell a bond on. And they're compensating us absolutely nothing for either doing that work, and we don't appreciate that increase in the assessed value for 20 years.
Right.
It's a double-edged sword of I have no interest in doing that for free, less than free. So that's the argument that I think that issue is going to be moving forward with the help of Commissioner Morgan and the legislature. And so at the next round of opportunity to speak on this issue, I'd like to probably have that included as the argument, regardless of who presents. It needs to be the idea that the norm is not going to be the norm anymore. People, you've got to wake up and smell the reality of this. These are tough times. So,
I have a question on the urban renewal. Does that only affect city taxes, or does that affect county taxes? When they put the freeze,
everybody,
they put the freeze
on. Districts, everybody.
It does. Okay.
However, the school districts, if I understand correctly, their rate is increased or supplemented by the common school fund.
By the state.
So if you look at the taxing districts that are actually impacted, it would be 4-H Extension, mm-hmm. it would be us, and I'm not really sure who else. Because the city gets what they get. They don't get as much.
Possibly RCC, because...
they're higher education, right?
I don't know that they get backfilled as well as the... Yes,
the school fund is really K-12, so that may not...
What about the fire districts and the irrigation districts?
They're not within the district.
Then I have a question. Maybe you can answer this. When they sunsetted the last urban renewal, there was, say, $1 million left in the pot, $2 million left in the pot.
They paid us, but they stopped it and reimbursed the schools the million. And then when the residual came up and it was like the end, it was almost another million. So
okay.
It was like $2 million. So we put back to the schools, which really screwed their budgets because that was a windfall of money that they were not expecting.
Correct.
We had to pay the state back.
That was where I was going with this. If they're funded on the backside by the state, and then when we dissolve the district, mm-hmm. and we say now we got to give this up, and here's the schools going, we want our share. Just say no. You've already been backfilled from the state. You don't get anything.
No, it had to go back to the districts that were impacted.
And we give it to the district, but then the state says we've already paid for that, so they want the money back. Is that how that worked?
I believe that's how it worked.
And this is probably for executive sessions. This is all it came. These are all rules that were put in place years and years ago, and we just play it and acquiesce. At some point, I want to see Josephine County take more of a logical stand. And if the state wants their money or blah, 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 they're going to have to sue us. You know, let's take these elements to court, and we may lose. But I like the idea that we're not just rolling over for a stupid system that makes no sense logically. And I don't see the state actually waking up to the issue until there's a lawsuit. You see the forest trust lands, the county forest trust lands. They never do anything. And I've been watching it for 6 years at the county. We're a small portion of that. They don't do anything until the county sues, districts sue them and say, okay, now we'll change our practices and we'll get back into doing this better for you guys. Or they divest themselves of lands that are not administered. You know, nothing's going to change for us until we start taking, I think, a harder stand.
Does the county have to sign off on the city's renewal district at all? Although it affects us.
No say. Present it to us, but we don't have
but no approval process.
Good to know. That was asked of me at the chamber this morning, and I was told that our previous commissioners were there but said no objection. So they took it as the county approved it.
Yeah, we don't have an ability to object. They have to present it to us, but we don't have
no approval process.
Wow.
And I don't know that I would have objected. I mean, it's a good thing. It's just the system is for us to be generating forest receipts that, you know, are $14 million, and we say, can we give you some money to help out? That's when the rules were written. They're not written for now. But that impacts us significantly. Thank you very much for your presentation. We're going to go forward this year, but I think in the future we need to really look at this.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the fairgrounds and everything is inside that renewal district, isn't it?
It is.
Yep. So that may be our opportunity to get some of that money back as a project. I don't know if we had any projects. Did we have any projects listed in the...
They did not include the Dimmitt campus. And if you would have asked them a year ago before we tore it down, what is the single largest element of light in the county? Ask the police. You know, we built that fence because it was probably the single, you know, biggest problem for them.
A homeless hill.
And then they don't even include it in the urban renewal district.
And Commissioner Walker did request that they would, and it was not included.
We don't have, you know, you can only channel money from the district, from the urban renewal district. You can only channel that into projects that are on the list. Do we have any projects from the fairgrounds, from the fair side of it, in the list at all? So it really doesn't matter how much they collect. We can't have projects anyway.
It was all city things.
Future capital improvements.
You know, it was things the city wanted.
The only nexus that I can see is that convention center idea, that there would be located, you know, in that area. So $18 million, if I remember correctly, slated for that. There could be other little things that are...
But is it listed in the district?
The convention center is listed, but it doesn't have a specific location. There's a couple of things that are listed that don't have an actual location yet. They could have, you know, a tie-in to that.
Okay.
But we'll have to...
Can you keep an eye on that? All?
Okay, so as far as our CAFA...
We'll move forward.
Okay, what I wanted to just let you know is that... it needs to be into the department by May 1. Chris and I will be at the JTAG meeting next Wednesday, so we won't be available. Don't know if you need us there or if it can just go on the consent calendar if you're fine with that, or if we don't need to speak on it, you could do it next week. If you want us to speak on it, then we'd have to wait a week.
we're still working out the next week's schedule as far as when the WBS is going to happen, but I don't need you guys to be there to speak to it. As a liaison, I can speak to it. We've been doing it for a little while.
Yeah.
It's the same drill. So until that revenue element changes and we're, you know, a net payer or whatever, like Clamath County is, we're going to have to. We'll continue. Okay.
All right.
I don't have any objection to putting this on the consent calendar.
It's a continuing of something we've already done, so.
Yep.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks.
So we go on to parks, in order number 2017-019, in the matter of authorization of execution of land lease with Grove Condos Incorporated, Lake Selma Resort, for lease of county property and lease agreement. We have this right here for this.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Well, how are you?
Good. I know you guys are familiar with this topic, as I have to let you know that it's going to be coming now for some time. They've officially closed escrow. The Grove Condos is a little bit scary in the term of what they're actually doing on site. But as of right now, with the 400 foot of lake frontage, the purpose there is to continue boat concessions for the lake so that people can rent a boat, go out for the day, have a little bit of fun. It's also the only stretch of parking around the entire lake that is not fee-based, since it's under the resort's blanket. I've had a few conversations with the president of the company. Although he's not planning to be active on site, he has assured me he wants to be a good business partner and a neighbor to not only parks but to the residents. I have put a few bugs in his brain about erecting some signs that make it very clear that smoking can't happen on this portion of the lake because it is a park. I've also made it clear that continual smoking on that property can certainly end their agreement permanently. So he's aware.
Is vaping considered smoking?
So the difference is that tobacco products are allowed in parks. But any marijuana substance is not. So whether you're vaping, smoking, eating brownie, whatever they come up with, products with any sort of marijuana are not allowed on the property.
And our tobacco prevention specialists with the county and our public health department are actually wanting to change that. They would like that every county campus, every county property be tobacco-free, smoke-free, any product-free.
Yeah. And I sat with somebody yesterday. We discussed some things, gathered information from parks, and they'll be delivering that to you in a meeting with our concerns, just with it able to enforce that. So that'll be
coming up. Well, it seems like the vaping community goes out of their way to push the envelope on that. You know, I mean, you get a guy in a restaurant, and he pulls out his vaping thing, and he says, "I'm not smoking." And you know, and then you know, then the controversy's on. You know, and you're the big cloud of vapor going around them, and you think, "Hey, you're not supposed to smoke in here." "Oh, I'm not smoking. I'm vaping." And you know, that it's just pushing the envelope a little bit, and it immediately sparks controversy between two people that like Selma.
Absolutely.
You know, "Don't do that around my kids." "Well, I can do whatever I want." You know, and so I don't know. I didn't know whether you just out if you say smoking and vaping and anything else is out, but I don't know how you enforce that.
Well, this question really goes to what the signs are going to say. So
yeah.
You can't just say no smoking. It's got to be no smoking and ingesting any illegal, federally illegal substances or something like that.
Yeah.
All illegal substances are prohibited or whatever.
Yeah,
but it's legal.
You're right. God, you keep bringing me back to that.
It is illegal in public. It is legal in your own residence.
Yeah.
So that's the education piece that people are still learning.
And it's not just at that 400. It's when you get into the boat, when you're on the lake, when you're anywhere in our public, it's all of our properties. So
yeah.
It's just the access.
This is going to be a tough enforcement issue is what I see the problem.
Yeah.
We have a marine deputy. Let's just stick them on the lake.
Different than you see it at any, you know, in our camp spots. It's gonna happen. It's when it becomes an issue, and it's blatant, and it's impacting people, and we get complaints on it.
Yeah. Parks really takes them out of sight, out of mind to the whole marijuana or other things that happen in our parks. We're a campground. We understand people are there to recreate, and so we just tackle it as the issues come up and try to manage it to limit issues. Oh, yeah, we've been managing that for 10, 20 years, however long.
Not a problem to you. It's not a problem to me.
Yeah, and so the concern really is if they get a dispensary, they have to obviously go through planning. They're working on all that. So if and when the dispensary goes in, then there will be other issues with them just
you know, expensing and how much of that will end up on our property, but that's another battle for another day. This is solely for so that they can continue their concessions and have that lakefront.
Are we funneling complaints because we really don't have the manpower to follow every complaint? Are we funneling anything to OLCC? They're the ones gathering all the money, so they should be the ones that dispense the resources.
Yeah.
And if they were to be bombarded by every complaint that comes into here gets forwarded to OLCC and say, now what are you going to do? And I have people say, well, who do I call? And I give them OLCC's number. They go, why do I call OLCC? I said, they've got the money. We don't. We don't get anything back from it, so we can't really provide that service and that enforcement. They have it. So call them and just let their phone ring off the hook for a while instead of us trying to make excuses and us being the bad guy.
Yeah.
They're the ones that form the rule. They're the ones that get all the money. They're the ones that have all the responsibility and the mm-hmm. control. We're kind of left out of the picture. The counties are just left in the middle of this. You know, hey, it's in your backyard, but we don't know what to do about it. We don't care what you do about it. So send it over to OLCC. And if they get, instead of 20 calls a week, if they get 500 calls a week, maybe it'll open some eyes.
Yeah.
Maybe. It won't, but maybe it will.
As far as hurt. Yeah, it can't hurt. And if we get an increase of complaints or anything, I'll certainly be pointing people in that direction.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, great. This is probably an administrative item.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. And Wayne, the president, may
the
be at a public meeting just in case.
The lease didn't change a lot?
No, I am increasing rent. What changed is it does absolutely have the language now of no marijuana consumed, used, held on site. So that was definitely added. Legal had, you know, their standard language that they've updated. The area on the original lease was contradicting the 400 feet. It actually, the boundaries didn't match what was on the map. And so we clarified that so that it's a very clear boundary in what they are actually renting. And then the leases. We've think been at $800. And so what I did is the next 2 years are $800. The 2 years after that are $900 each. And then I'm at $1,000 for the last 2 years in this 6-year agreement. Other than that, it's all the same stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Public Works, item 2B. Local agency agreement number 31804 between Joseph County and Oregon Department of Transportation for Joseph County signs delineation upgrades.
Good morning,
Board.
Before I dive too far, I just got to point to the typo, and I will explain what happened there as I move my way through. On the total revenue cost, it shows $604,500. The actual cost is, as reflected in the agreement of the 253-904, not to exceed $238.67. So, going back to the start, and I'll try to keep it not diving too deep into the weeds at all the various levels. The federal government, each couple years, has their global safety plan that they do. The most recent one is the MAP 21, which I believe moving ahead, progress, whatever it is, for the 21st century. So then that allocates money out to all the various state agencies. What that typically looks like is the HSIP program, the Highway Safety Improvement Plan. Historically, that money went to ODOT, but more recently they decided they want to make it jurisdictionally blind. So effectively, cities, counties, ODOT all compete on equal footing. How they determine where it's going to be applied is kind of a metric of how many serious crashes or fatalities there are per average daily traffic. So once you get past the still, I can't really get over the crassness of saying, hey, here's what that cost is worth, or here's what that life is worth, but you have to have a way to kind of quantify these things. That identifies these areas. The way this particular cycle came through, ODOT is in the midst of their next STIP plan, so it didn't make sense for them to try and pile this in quickly. So instead, they change this over to the exchange funds like we use for chip seal every year for our overlay, where we basically say they take $100 of federal money, cut the strings, they give us $94 on it. So that's what's happening here. After they went through to all the various agencies and looked to find out where the most dangerous areas were, they looked at them as corridors, so not just a specific intersection, but they said, hey, we think this whole length of Galise Road is bad news. So all these projects are going to be focusing on fixing all the turns in that area. So they develop a 300% list to say, hey, there's $1 million available. Here's $3 million of projects potentially. Whittle that down to a 150% list, which is kind of in where this $604,000 came from. So all of our projects on ODOT's 300% list come to $604,000. But we had the idea to say, hey, can we do that work in-house? And they said, well, look, well, sure enough, we can. So we are going to do these projects in-house, other than the initial ball banking where they go out and decide how fast you can take these turns safely. once that's done. We'll do the sign install, the delineator install, all that stuff. My guess is we will get through two-thirds of that list probably with the $230,000-odd of money that's there.
And now we can do that without the state saying, no, you've got to do this, this, and this. You're now moving it in-house, so the authority comes back to you rather than to ODOT.
Right. We will still have to do it as the federal standards would dictate. So if they say you got to put a delineator every 60 feet around that turn, there's going to be a delineator every 60 feet around that turn. But yeah, we've just got enough in-house efficiencies versus that being state or federalized. We're going to get further down that list than they would. It's a good program. It's far better than it used to be. Prior to this, it would be a matter of the state would say, hey, there was the one that drives me crazy, there was a fatal out on Merlin Road there at the sanitarium turnoff. And that scored really high. There's a lot of cars there, but a fatal that gets a lot of points. And they said, well, we can fix that by putting in a center turn lane at the tune of $800,000. If you guys just put a 20% match on, we'll do it. Well,
you could do it for the 20% match.
Well, and the problem was the fatal was somebody making an illegal U-turn. It's not a matter of the signal or anything else there. So he said, no, that's crazy. But this newer program, effectively, we're putting our time in and getting 94 cents on the dollar to put in. You know, you look at these roads, Pinecrest, Monument, Isaiah, these are high-volume roads with a lot of turns that are inherently unsafe without tons and tons of markings. So I think it's as good a fit for that money as you could possibly come up with. We're still pushing for future years for this money. I saw Indiana had a creative idea with this money. They were actually used it to get GPS tracking and a new inventory for all their signs. They could say, hey, if we can go out and identify these signs more quickly, look at their reflectivity, we want to put this money towards the GPS unit. So that's, we're still kind of pushing to get those options. As it is now, ODOT kind of says, here's the eight types of systematic fixes you can do, because otherwise it could be everything under the sun. It becomes a long process for them to do. But these are the kind of upgrades we would do. If money were no object, we would be out there putting up more chevrons, more delineators, more turn signs, that kind of a thing.
Okay, I have a question. This is technical, and you and I can talk about this
sure.
later. But the ball in the glass, what is that for how fast?
The ball bank, right. You literally mount it to the dash of your truck,
okay.
And as they go through the turn at various speeds, you watch how far that ball travels off center, and that gives you an idea of what is the safe speed to take that turn at.
Now, I have a question, that's why we'll take it up later. You take that in my 1975 GMC pickup, and that ball's all the way over to the other side. You're going to say, hey, we need to slow down here. But I can take that in Simon Hare's new Chairman Hare's new Toyota, and that ball doesn't go very far.
No, it'll do the same thing. Inertia is inertia. It won't matter what kind of race car.
Is this how it feels, maybe?
Yes, because it's a flat tube. So whatever you're going, you're pulling the same amount of G's or inertia.
Okay.
That ball is going to swing no matter what type of car it is. So no,
okay.
The type of car would not matter. It is important to have the same person operating that ball bank on every turn, so you're comparing apples to apples.
Isn't there an element of, like, these vehicles, they don't just lean parallel to the inertia, they'll actually counteract that bank, some of these cars would?
Yes.
I would imagine some
yes.
would, which does change, because there's an increase in friction on the element that you're going up.
Yes, I believe the newer ball bank has a float that allows it to stay parallel.
It
but
seems like it would have to have that.
But again, yes, centripetal.
Give an example of a 65 Chevelle that I built a number of years ago. I used to drive 70 miles an hour between here and Roseburg all the time, and I took that car up there, and I thought I was going to roll it at 60 around
mm-hmm.
some of the corners
yeah.
on I-5, so I put sway bars front and rear, stopped it. But I did not roll over, which will affect the tip of that ball.
Right.
Because I stabilized the car to go flat around the corner instead of leaning over.
But even if you're in a Formula One car, the G forces exerted on your body are still the same, regardless of the type of car. So that's the principle
that's
of the ball
the
bank.
Principle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
He's advocating for ODOT for up there, because I can see, like, 199 in certain places every time it's got issues, and then Case Highway. If there's a certain curve my entire life, I think that there's probably been, I know that there's been 3, 4, 5 people who have died in a mile stretch around my parents' ranch
mm-hmm.
Since mm-hmm. I've been a kid. And that's probably conservative. Because
mm-hmm.
I can just count the crosses that are
right.
there. And there's been nothing done in that stretch my entire life.
Those roads would be looked at the same as these were, same, the jurisdictionally blind. They would say, what's the ADT, how many wrecks were there, and they assign a metric to.
Because literally, I would say that that's the most dangerous stretch of road in Josephine County, is that mile stretch in Case I were in a really tight
mm-hmm.
turn before the 5-mile marker.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, I've come around that corner I experienced a guy who flipped over in his truck and was heading the other direction, and I stepped on a piece of meat to try to go get him. He'd done his grocery shopping, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's part of somebody. That's just terrible. He was fine, and he'd already gotten out and stumbling around. I mean, that stuff happens like routinely.
Right, right.
In that area.
Yeah, and I don't have ODOT's list in front of me. My suspicion is that, yeah, I don't know where it scores. It seems like it would certainly be high up on the list, and if it's a matter of...
And I think we've all got, because Pinecrest is mine, and we said, oh, can't change Pinecrest at all, but everybody that lives out Pinecrest tells you that that corner's dangerous, and I don't care what ODOT says. It's dangerous, and we should be able to have the authority to take public input and say, you know what, we're going to do something, even if it's 5 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour.
Pinecrest.
And I don't care what the
matter. Yeah. Well, they're going to go fast.
Read me number one on our list. Number four overall.
Number.
In the green.
Yeah, I got you.
Ta-da.
Thank you. You're good.
This is only the county.
Good man.
I don't have a grounds list. Yeah.
Good job.
So, it's not.
Jurisdictionally blind, shouldn't we have a list comprehensively? County?
There is one. This is just the one they gave for the local partners. Yeah, this doesn't have like the city roads on it, for instance, either. They had a formula allocating, to all the various.
It would be really interesting to see, because I think somebody does on kids Highway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would be willing to say that's probably
true. Well,
I don't hear about
Kings
Highway like I hear about
Pinecrest
Crashes, though.
It's just the location of the constituents.
I get ODOT. I'm sorry, I get OSP.
No.
I get them statewide. Their news releases for crashes and all, so I see which highway is statewide, and Cage Highway isn't the one you hear of that often. You do hear of Pinecrest all the time. But you're right, it's just press releases I'm going.
99 between here. Yeah, the sheriff and I went out to Kilmer last night. We were discussing while we're out there. Yeah, there's a fatality there. And then we got talking about
any progress in that there's a gap area down there. They put in barricades on either side.
Yep.
You can look at that pine tree and say that's been hit three times.
No mark
up. That up, and that isn't something you walk away from.
And we talked about Highway 97. That's a death trap. And when I get on 97, I'm looking for a soft spot, because I don't ever go to sleep on 97.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Brown's a city detective now, but he lost all his teeth.
Thank you on Pinecrest. Pass that along.
Mike Mason was another deputy that didn't actually go back to the road after his crash. It was so traumatic. And I mean, we've had deputies after deputies crash out there as well. So
it's a tough fix. The reality is cars are better performing now. They're quieter when you drive them, and folks don't have a sense of how quickly they're driving.
Right.
And the roads are still the roads they were, 20, 30, 40, 50-year-olds by and large.
You mentioned the STIP. How far out? It seems to me the last time I was at it, and we haven't had an RVAC meeting in quite some time, and the last time we were there, we're trying to pick projects out to 2025. 2022,
yes.
21. I think the last step went 18 to 21.
19 to 22 is going on right now.
19 to 22. So that's, that's what, 5 years,
right,
6 years from now?
Yeah.
And the way
it's just programming that federal money.
The highway has progressed as a street. If you go out, even Monument and some of these other roads, they're fairly flat because they've had a full overlay. There's nothing but chip seal my entire life. So the whole thing. And when you drive in an RV, you're just floating. It's like being on the water. And that road is just, it's crazy. Water stands everywhere. It's probably, my dad says it's the worst highway in Oregon. He's probably been on most of them. I've been on a fair amount. It's terrible. I mean, it's the shortest highway in Oregon. It probably is the worst highway.
Not a high priority to them.
No, they don't.
And I have a question for you, Mr. Grandison. It seems in my short deal with RVAC, there used to be a pretty good size sum of money comes in, and then all of a sudden, by the time it gets down to Josephine County and the actual act, it seems like, there isn't any money by the time it gets to us, the actual people that have the concern. But yet, all of a sudden, there's $1 million for Highway 62 bypass. When I got in there, and you've been in there a number of years, but up until then, there was no money for land acquisition. There was no money for the 62 bypass. And all of a sudden, $100 million appears out of nowhere. When the money comes into the state from the federal and they give it to ODOT, and then ODOT says, yeah, miraculously, we have all the money to do half the bridge all across with Columbia. Are they taking money out of the federal? Do we know how much money the state of Oregon actually gets from the federal? And do they ratchet their share off in Portland, then give it to ODOT, and ODOT ratchets all its share off for the climbing lane, Highway 62 bypass, Fern Valley. They, all those ODOT projects start grabbing at the money until it comes down to the, it comes down to the act. There's no money for the act. There's no money left in the barrel for the act. It's all taken off ahead of time. I'd like to see a full accounting of the budget, whatever the feds give to Oregon and what they do with it before it ever gets to the act. Because there's acts all over Oregon that really, there's no sense. In fact, Region 3, there's really no reason for us to meet. There's no money to divvy up, and I think that's why we're not doing anything. Question? Is that a good question to ask?
Yeah, we need a few distinctions, and they're the biggest reason for, like, the 62 and the big projects there by Costco. That's all modernization funds, which have not changed a lot. It's the enhanced money that I think you're talking about that went from, yeah, $13 million every year to $1.5 million every two, whatever the heck it was.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the stuff we have lost for local projects. But, yeah, I mean, I could certainly start the ball with ODOT if you want
to
see some.
I
don't know how they
what they get from the feds,
right,
and then how they distribute it.
You should write a letter to,
Frank Green,
Arthur.
I was thinking the guy at the top, Matthew.
Oh, Garrett.
Garrett.
Yeah.
Just or the OTC and say, no, I think it would be really. We give you reports all the time. What about you getting us?
I think that's
expensive.
I think
it's
very.
Not just here. I'd like to see statewide.
Statewide. I think we're all interested and maybe afraid to ask.
My guess is it's there. You know, once they get whatever, pick a number from the feds, $500 million. How do they divide that between their five regions? I don't know.
Population.
Yeah, by and large, population probably has some a road mile component in there.
No, we know from the east, it's not road miles because they have more.
There's a component. It's a function.
It's cars per area. Yeah, because that's one of the issues, that they have the most road miles in Harney or whatever those counties are,
yeah,
and they have no money for them. So it's Portland that's getting the money. Before you disappear, I want to bring up the airport thing again,
mm-hmm,
but I don't know if we need to finish up this.
Yeah,
that was it. That's, you got the bulk of it.
Okay. It's a consent calendar item to me, but it's fine. Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
My
morning
open there to speak on
for WSBS next week.
It opened?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'll
speak to it because you're not there tomorrow. I'm Wednesday morning.
No,
tomorrow.
You want a cheat paragraph or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It would hurt.
Okay.
Mr. Graves responded back,
yeah,
to me saying a manager level needs to be, and he said that he had arranged with Arthur to be the signature authority.
I don't know about that. To review his AP submissions, that we require a director signature on the AP submissions, and
okay,
so he asked me to review when he submits his accounts payable. I think that's different from who's,
I agree,
overseeing.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that was who I've emailed saying the board has expressed that a manager level would be appropriate to be appointed in your place, not a staff level. It would. I will follow up to determine if that will be Public Works Director Brandis or myself. With this decision, appointed acting airport manager will work with staff. His response was that you had agreed to take on the signature authority items.
That one element, but the authority would continue.
Okay.
You'll work it out. I'm happy with that.
That's fine. I'm around. I've got still got all the contacts from WH Pacific for whatever contacts they get going on. All
right.
As long as it's covered, you're all good.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks. Thank you,
Rob.
Community development. We've got a bunch of stuff on here. We've got a contract for personal services from Josephine County, then Bladian Data Systems Corporation online permitting software. Item number two is contract for personal services between Josephine County and Technical Imaging Systems Incorporated for document scanning. And then item number E3, a memorandum of understanding between Josephine County and the Department of Land Conservation and Development for Resource Owners.
Okay, so I'll just start with the, first of all, I apologize, Terry, that you had to amend the agenda for me. We were waiting for some approvals, so. But I'll start with the Paladin one. The Paladin contract is the one that is for the online permitting software. And just so you know, there may be some minor changes to that contract between now and when you actually see it next week, if you agree to see it move forward. Paladin, Leah, and myself have a conference call today at 2 to see if they have other concerns or anything. So that contract may change slightly. So
is that the last, is your conversation this afternoon the last hurdle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so after that, then the contract is finalized. I didn't realize that needed the signatures before it came to you, so we're also going to try and get those signatures before next week's meeting as well. So.
Okay.
The second one, I'll just keep going down the line, is the one for the scanning project. That's with TIS. And that one, they've agreed to everything that's in there. There's no questions on anything. They've actually signed it and dropped it in the mail. So
price stayed the same and everything?
Yes, yes, yeah. And then the third one is something that came up last week. I briefly discussed it with my liaison, but I want to bring to you. And that is the state has, first of all, our rural land development code, which is our zoning code basically, is outdated, cumbersome, it has issues. And so I've been talking with the state about, you know, who does this type of work? Who cleans these type of things up? Do you have consultants? What does it cost, et cetera? So they were...
The goal being is we're trying to not be onerous for landowners and having historic things that are inconsistent with state laws that have changed and that are no longer applicable. So one of the elements of getting the code codified is going to be that we're going to clean it up. And so this is all part of the plan. But then it's like her office at her staffing level doesn't have the capacity to go in and start doing some of these things in a timely fashion. And so...
Right.
So we're actually... We're finding out what the changes in the state requirements are before you bring it to us for nuisance ordinances and things of that sort, or is it just zoning issues?
No, so what this MOU is specific to a very select portion of the code. You know, the code's about YAFIC. And what happened is the state got a hold of me and said, hey, Julie, we have some grant money left over. It has to be spent by May 31st. You've expressed some concerns with your ordinance. What we can do is we can, at no charge to the county, look at your resource zones, farm, woodland, resource, and clean those up for you. Have them tweak it so they follow the state model code. We'll also look at your conditional use standards and some of your definitions, which all tie together with those resource zones. And they said, we're willing to do this for you at no charge, but you got to move really quick. And so they went back and forth on an MOU. We got the final draft yesterday that Wally is reviewing. I would like to see us move forward because, as Commissioner Harris said, that this is just part of a bigger project, which we'll talk about in the quarterly report, to get that ordinance cleaned up.
Really, they're just going to be doing the legwork of vetting this, providing us either a red line version, a new version, and we'll ultimately have to approve that.
Correct.
It isn't them given authority to just do it. They're kind of making a recommendation about these are where your code is deficient or in excess of state law, and here's some opportunities for you to clean it up a little bit, make it easier for a land developer, a user, to be clear about what they can and cannot do. And I think it's going to go a long way. It's part of what the LDAC, the Land Development Advisory Committee, was set up 6 years ago to try to do, but it's more comprehensive and focused on just resource zones and without resource and exclusive farming.
Does it standardize, make it easier county to county?
Absolutely.
It would make us more consistent with our neighboring
right, county, right.
So that when somebody goes there and they think, well, they've got this, and then you come
right, here. Right, that's what I mean. Does it stop a lot of the pirating?
Yes,
okay, good.
Yes.
That's super.
Yes, so what they want to do is they want to make it compatible with the model code. And then, you know, the county has responsibilities. So
we can tweak that.
Yes,
we
use that as a foundation, and we have our own elements. To
correct.
It. Okay.
So what they do is they make it, they look at that part of our code. They make it consistent with the model code. They work with me on, Julie, what do you think about, you know, we go back and forth. And then our commitment is that we have to have all of our edits approval satisfactory with the Angelo Planning Group by May 31st. And then we actually have time to adopt those changes because, as you know, Wally has wanted to proceed with major amendments, not proceed with major amendments until we're codified. So what would happen is we would wait till the codification and then we'd come in with these amendments. But we have to have our comments to them and everything wrapped up by May 31st.
Would this have to go through the Rural Planning Commission, the code, and the change of this?
Right.
Would
right, but not until after right. We're done with the Angelo Planning Group.
Yes.
We would just run them through as normal text amendments. But for now, like I said, it's I hated bringing it at the last minute, but it's one of those things. I really think let's take advantage of that money.
I like that at no cost to the county.
Yeah.
That's a head turner right there.
Well, I mean, it's my staff time, you know, but it's still, it's a grant. The state has the funding. I'm really excited to see this because when I talked to DLCD about a month ago, they said, Julie, they're not going to give grant money to you. They're focused on the coast. And they came back. So I'm happy to hear that. So I think we need to take advantage of that. So so with that, those are the three. We'll have the final versions in time for the meeting next week. We're just asking that those move forward. So
I'll have to take a look at it. I think the memorandum of understanding is an administrative item. We've approved the personnel services contracts actually through our economic development appropriations. So these have already been approved on an administrative level. And so really, I think they're more of a consent calendar, actually just signed the documents. And
all three of them you want to go to consent?
Well, the last one, the memorandum of understanding, that's an administrative. It's
okay.
A change in policy. So the first two would be consent, and the third one would be administrative. I will.
Okay, so then I'd like to move on to the quarterly report, if that's okay.
Can I interrupt
sure.
just a second? You don't have to leave. Would you just give us a 2-minute update? Because then you can go and do whatever you were still doing, Mr. Streeter.
Well, sure. I was just doing, trying to do the math on our average. We just sold 4 timber sales.
Well, you can pull up so you can.
Four timber sales. One was about $2.6 million. We sold for $526 per thousand. One was about $2.1 million for $651 per thousand. And the third big one was $1.3 million. We sold for $370 per thousand. And one small sale, we sold for $255 per thousand. So. We did really well.
Well, hold on. So what is that? Because I'm getting asked, oh, we don't need the levy because you just had enough money to cover everything. And I said, no.
No, they could have sold for $1,000 a board foot and it would cover everything.
Yeah, those are the gross dollars for the timber sale. Our payment structure is based on 25% due in the first fiscal year, 25% the second fiscal year, 50% in the third fiscal year, unless they choose to harvest on it, then payments due before harvesting. So it's kind of, we have a minimum that we can count on, but it may come in earlier if the purchasers choose to harvest before the termination of the contract.
And expenses come out of that.
Yeah.
And that's gross before expenses.
This is great, but it's not. The forestry program is never going to fund this.
Well, and I'm still waiting for the contract or the paperwork that we have officially signed that says the trust is going to juvenile justice.
Yes.
That and so.
The fiscal budgeting process.
Okay, so that's good to hear. The time frame.
That element of without codifying it necessarily in either resolution or ordinance ahead of time. We're going to be doing that as part of the budget process, and then after that's probably finalized, we'll make it law. But we can do these policy ideas through the budget process, and then refine it or codify it.
And I just want to make sure we have our answers.
Yes. Yeah. This is
correct. Yeah.
Great return for the county.
Good. It's an exciting first step.
So one of the major things that might be a contributing factor is, too, the price of timber is up right now. So the price of timber goes up and down a little bit. The other one is that the policy shift within Mr. Schreeder's office to do these bids by sealed bids as opposed to oral auction, where people can kind of maybe even work it out outside
ahead
of time or on the fly as they go. This one they had to put in ahead of time because they were sealed bids. And that might have made a big difference. So thank you very much. That's a great report.
Sure. And I will send you an email summarizing everything for all three of you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to provide that as a time because they just opened the bids.
That's incredible. That's fine. And I have one for Terry for the record. So I'm going to try and zip through this pretty quick. I just wanted to go through some of the highlights. I know you were concerned. We had talked last time that I was here about what is going into that economic development budget. So I just have the highlights here. I just want to go through real quick with you. One was $100,000 for the Illinois Valley Industrial Park.
basically what we have is out at the Illinois Valley Industrial Park, we have a park that was started and never completed. So we have land that it's flat, it has a road running through it, it has utilities to the site, it has two wells out there, and it has a large septic system for the park, but it doesn't have a fire suppression system.
It doesn't have a fire suppression system, water reservoir. It's not as though we're going to have to invest $1 million in a fire suppression system. The fire hydrants are out there. The plumbing for those fire hydrants, the pump infrastructure for fire suppression is there. There was no hydrologic study done by the USDA grant to put in a water reservoir, and Mr. Schmelzer's been out there to take a look at it. Who knew that you would have to do one to create a pond to hold water? It would have seemed pretty logical.
Do they have a capacity that they need to have on site? I mean, can it be done with tanks instead of a pond?
It's about 1 million gallons or thereabouts. I mean, it's not small. Do you know the number?
I don't know the number.
It's not small, you know. It's fairly significant. The reservoir that has to be there on call.
See, a reservoir to me, though, if you have a pond, a retention pond or a reservoir or whatever, it'd be great this time of year because we're getting a lot of water. Raining like crazy out there. But you have an evaporation thing with a pond that you don't have with tanks.
It's supplemented by a specific well. Tanks work when you have a certain square footage, like the Kairos building. We need a new 210 Tacoma. Isn't that what it is, or is that the move? Anyway, the Tacoma property that we have, the Soastic Center.
Yeah,
that's the square foot requirement. That we have two 10,000-gallon tanks up there. It requires $20,000 in reserve. There's the building capacity for 1 million square feet. Out there in this industrial park.
So what do you?
It wouldn't be cost effective to do that with tanks. It would if we only had one building that was 20,000 square feet, and you know, you only have to have a gallon per square foot out there. So 20,000 gallon tanks, that's nothing. We could do that. But there's maintenance required for that. We've got motors in each of those tanks out in Scholastic and cool temperatures that circulate the water to keep it from freezing. There's a whole host of maintenance issues with tanks that we may not have with just a reservoir. So.
Okay.
We'll have to look at that, and I think that's something that we skipped the engineering element on this because we figured who can't dig a pond and hold water? And they even put a liner in there, and then the liner would come up during different elevation elements. There's a deal where the water table is higher than the pond, and so it's at certain times of year it doesn't hold water, and at certain times of year it like push the pool. You know, that fiberglass pool or whatever, it's a liner, it would push it out of the deal and it wouldn't hold. It might be that we have to go to tanks above ground that are totally independent of the aquifer and the high water level.
The tank, you know, and I'm just thinking from a contractor standpoint, tanks you can add onto the system, just like a sewage treatment plant. You can phase it. You can say, okay, I'm going to put 5 tanks in now to handle the buildings we now have and future development. But if we ever need to add to it, the infrastructure into the hydrants and everything's already done, so we just add more tanks for storage because that's all there would be.
Eventually we get maybe tanks as...
That's a contractor and an engineer would have to tell us that.
Yeah.
Right. So what we have out there is, so this park was developed and then... It had this issue, so everybody just, my understanding is, just kind of walked away. Nobody had the time and took it further. I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, we lack industrial space. People that are interested in the North Valley Industrial Park likely will not go out to the Illinois Valley Industrial Park. However, it does provide industrial space for those people in the Illinois Valley that want to have a business or develop into a park. The other part of it is, and I've talked with Larry a little bit about this, is... When you look at the airport, in my opinion, he needs to find a sustainable solution to keep that airport going. By developing the industrial park, he's now getting rents, which can help sustain the airport.
Yeah, he'll have that reason to keep it open.
Right.
Now, this is strictly standby. Do we have a water system out there that feeds all this stuff now on wells or what?
So there's two wells. This $100,000 is actually to address that fire suppression system. Put in a high capacity well if we can. It also is for a marketing flyer and any initial surveying work that we may need. So
now, the other day at Soastic, there was a gentleman in there and he had a company that he looked everywhere for 150 acres of industrial land and da 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 da. He couldn't find it anywhere and he had to rattle off Apida, Rendata, and all this stuff. And I just wrote him a little note, and I said, try Illinois Valley, the old Rough and Ready property, because I don't know how many acres that is, but it's pretty close.
400.
How much?
There's four parcels up to 400 acres, right?
Whatever. Yeah, there is 150 acres out there available. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he says, no, that's already in escrow.
Yeah.
With who?
Yeah, so...
That's a big secret right now?
So what we have is Rough and Ready has been sold. And then if it's the same people that I'm thinking that we went to go to Rendata, Commissioner, they wanted to be within a certain distance of I-5 and access onto a railroad. And that's why we were really limited on what we could give them.
Okay, that I didn't know what the requirements were, but he blurted out a $300 million investment.
It's the same property. Yep, 150 employees. I think it was 150 to 200 employees. The problem with it was the sites in the Illinois Valley aren't on rail, and they're too far from I-5.
Well, I told him, Mike says, have them relook at Rendata, and we'll throw in Paradise Ranch. He got a kick out.
Okay, so
that element, I've been thinking there needs to be a loan capacity to that. I can't. If you look back over the historic allocations of the Economic Development Fund to the airport, it is disproportionate to all other programmatic outlined statutorily. There's four programs that you can allocate money to right off the bat. It's not that they're not important, or maybe even proportionally they're more important than some of those other ones. I don't think those other programs would feel that way, but my opinion is airport has gotten the lion's share of economic development funds, more so than any other thing that we've ever done, and putting this $100,000 is definitely worth it, but they need to, if they generate revenue, like the parks is having to do with property reserve, pay those money back, they're going to have this as a loan. Everything else has been grant so far. And I'd say start out with $100,000 of it is a loan. And if we have to forgive an element of it, that's fine. But it can't be for free as much anymore. So it needs to be with the idea of generating revenue. And the idea that 300 acres is under escrow, there's probably businesses that are going to have to come in to augment and supply whatever's going on at Rough and Ready.
And you make that a requirement.
And yeah.
You add that in that
you have to pay this money back first before you just generally.
Yeah.
We're not maybe first, but in parallel, a portion of their revenues are paying this back. Because she's working with finite dollars. We've got an economic development committee that's going to start coming to us and saying, "I need $100,000 to do this."
Let me ask a question. And the company or whatever it is, the entity that's looking at that acreage out there for on Rough and Ready, they're looking to have the fact that there's an airport across the street is probably there. Are they going to use that?
So the company that purchased Rough and Ready is confidential yet. So
yes, that's fine. But
so I don't have that information yet, Commissioner.
I was wondering how.
I think it's a component.
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering how important it was to them to have an airport right on, almost on site.
I would say this, when we're looking at bigger companies, typically, they want to have that easy, what I call hopper access, where you can hop into your little private plane and hop over to where you need to be, and back and forth. So it would not surprise me if that was one of the selling factors on that property.
I see a lot of helicopters that cut right up against Baldy and go that way, and I know they're headed for Cave Junction.
Yeah.
Somewhere out there.
Okay.
So you'll see in here I have my funding priorities of when I think we should be expending the dollars. So the first one is for that industrial park. Just moving right along, I think that although I don't think funds should be coming out of the economic development fund for the project management of that North Valley Industrial Park sewer, I do want to make sure the commissioners are aware that something needs to be done with that and hopefully keep that in mind for the budget. I also have $75,000 set aside for a future industrial park. I call it an I-5 park. Basically, we're tapped out in the North Valley Industrial Park. We constantly have people. I mean, it's about two a week that you have asking for industrial space. We have two businesses right now that need to expand and don't have the room to even expand in the North Valley Industrial Park. We have a real issue, and we're turning good paying, we're turning companies away because we don't have industrial space. So we need to start, in my mind, start putting a pot of money aside to acquire land to develop an industrial park. Commissioner Hare and I have
talked about that, and he had a good idea on some land that maybe we should begin to start looking at. We're still going to need infrastructure dollars or something to that effect, and we can't keep taking that money and setting it aside. We need to start investing in it and putting something out there right now.
I have a very basic question.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the county getting into the real estate game of the private sector could go buy all this stuff and all we do is apply the infrastructure to them and charge them?
Okay. It's not uncommon for units of government to develop industrial parks, especially when you don't have the private sector doing it. So just like we do with the North Valley Industrial Park, we develop it,
North Valley Industrial Park ever paid its own freight? Or are we making money at the North Valley Industrial Park for the initial investment 35, 40 years ago? Or has it always been albatross?
I haven't seen the fund, but I'm told that there's quite a good pot of money sitting there from the industrial park. That is actually how we can help pay for that project management. Commissioner Hare would know better about it than I would, but my understanding is it wasn't an albatross. It actually, we didn't lose money on it, is my understanding.
No, we're starting to pay for the sewer system charges. We've been supplementing those. But those are coming into the black and paying for themselves. There is a pot of money, $300,000 or $400,000, if I understand correctly, in the North Valley Industrial Park investment pool. It has to be any property sales that happen up there have to reinvest in capital up in the North Industrial Park. So it's not a loser. We're not supplementing it, and we haven't been. So it'll pay. The idea is it'll pay for itself. We have 10 acres on the other side of the Astros property that they just acquired. We just need to provide infrastructure to it. Included in the park and get access to it. And that, I think that's the low-hanging fruit. I know 10 acres isn't what everybody needs, 150. But really, for our focus, I think that's what really fits in Josephine County more than that 150, 300-acre parcels out there. There is 120 acres out there in Kirby that does have access to a water district that should be explored and put on our map. What are the impediments to developing that?
That's what I was thinking. I see some of the impediments are not being close to I-5 because I think that's a...
But a small place that she's talked about is the search and rescue building, and maybe looking at a long-term plan of relocating search and rescue to a footprint on the airport, the Merlin Airport, and then we're right there with, what is that state?
ODF.
Civil Air Patrol and everybody else is out there.
The National Guard comes in and their base right there. So that might make a lot of sense to co-locate those services and then free up valuable industrial land that we're kind of competing with. But we need to move on, and that is a long-term discussion. Industrial land is really important to us, and we need to lean into that. But I agree, us acquiring land puts us in a really tough position. Every time I've sold industrial properties, I feel as though I give it away. Because they're saying they're going to bring in 100 jobs, they're going to expand, and all this stuff. And I'm like, how do I, look and get a horse for, if it's worth $3 a square foot, we end up giving away for $2 a square foot. And that's just a dollar we don't have to reinvest in infrastructure. So.
And I don't think the county should be giving discount prices on industrial land, especially knowing the demand that's out there.
It's really hard to say, if you don't do this sale, we're going to go to Central Point, we're going to go to Douglas County.
Well, the sale needs to be for cost, I think. I think where the county can be a partner is, do we have ability to waive fees, or do we have ability to do something else? But we might not. It's in our charter that we can't waive fees for certain things.
At the development stage rather than the land.
And that is, when you read through this for that Illinois Valley Industrial Park, that is one of the incentives that I suggest, is that we waive the development fees out there. With putting the money in the I-5 park, we're not to that point yet. So, but it's just beginning to think.
Do you have a location?
So you want the $75,000 just to go into a fund?
I want it to go into a reserve so that we can.
So that if something comes up, we're a player.
Not necessarily the North Valley Industrial Park, but for infrastructure needs in the future.
I'm
looking at that 160 acres that ODOT owns up in the exit 69. They're not going to need all that 160 acres. Maybe we can use it for something else. Maybe the county can do a land swap and something. We'll figure it out.
We're still at some point going to need money
to
provide the jobs to help our people.
We need to land swap them or something out of the Agnes Avenue thing. So let's get some bonds.
Okay, so then the next one is $75,000 towards workforce housing. I wanted to be very clear. This is workforce housing. This is for people that are willing to work, have a job, and just need a stable place to make sure that they can be prepared and go to work, have a place for their family. We have all the data that shows that they're more reliable employees. Basically, this is targeted towards the Illinois Valley, the Cape Junction area. I'm part of a group that looks at housing. We have the resources to do it in Grants Pass. A lot of people will only focus on the Grants Pass area, and we're not able to find the people that will focus in the Cape Junction area because it's not considered the urban area. So anyways, we have found a developer that is willing to work, nonprofit developer, it's NeighborWorks Umpqua, is willing to look at putting neighbor workforce housing out there. We do have to pay an admin fee for them to run, to develop it. And then also they go for the grants, and we get all the grant funding, but the county contribution, when I discussed with them, could be about $5,000 per unit. And these are actual single-family homes in a subdivision it's the program 238, Commissioner, I think that you talked about. 235. So it utilizes that program where you're looking at smaller workforce housing. They have to help with it. They have to pay. They have to have a job. That's the type of program that is.
Is there an oversight side of it? You say these are housing for employees. So they get in there and they're not employed. Are they paying for these houses like the 235 program? You had low requirement to get in, but you still had to make a house payment.
They have to pay for it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind this of like a Habitat for Humanity.
Well, that's what I've wanted. I was hoping you wouldn't say that, but because I'm not a... Well, they're fine.
But it's based on the same thing. They have to help out. They have to pay. It's not a freebie.
Okay.
Right. So.
And they continue to check up. With the low-income housing that I went to in Bend, once you're in, you're in. And nobody ever came back to see if you got a job as a pharmacist at Rite Aid. Nobody ever checked. And this guy's in there for his family living in a really nice place with a heated subterranean garage for nothing. So I just want to make sure there's some oversight.
This group does do the oversight. The other one that we want to talk to, we haven't entered into contracts or agreement or anything. The other one we want to work with and check with is Jackson County Housing, because they do the same type of thing. And they do a pretty tight ship of monitoring that as well.
Okay, all right. So.
I don't want to cut you off, Ms. Spencer, but I'm looking at this time frame. I have an 11 o'clock conference call with the state on that IGA course.
So let me zip through it real quick.
You've got an issue having to do with commercially zoned property. Are you addressing that today?
I will, and I'll zip through real quick. So I'm just going to tell you revolving loan fund, read it, code enforcement cases, read it. The big one that I have here is marijuana extraction and processing. It's on page 4. There's no number on it. It's number C. And I spoke with Commissioner Hare about this. We have a problem right now, and you'll notice one of the maps in here, this one. Basically, we've had 14 applications for marijuana processing in a 2-week period. And the rules that we have on the book in staff's mind need to be repaired. For example, marijuana processing was not something in our code, so last year commissioners said, well, a similar use would be meat packing, so wherever we allow meat packing, let's allow processing. What that did was it said, so processing is allowed in agricultural areas and industrial areas, but by that order, it then said, and now we're going to allow it in downtown commercial areas. And people have been complaining about it in the commercial areas. We actually had one withdraw from a commercial area in Williams. And then we also have concerns about them being in the downtown areas. One, because of that flash that could happen and starting fires, but then also the fact that we're taking away from our urban centers and now turning them into just marijuana industrial parks is what we're doing. So we have concerns on that. So
you're holding off approval on these?
Well, no. They've gone through the site plan review because we have to process them. We would like that order rescinded that said to allow them in the commercial areas.
So you've approved some of them or all of them?
So we have 14. Several of them have gone through the site plan review process. They're now waiting in building safety, which brings in the second part of the problem. So with these things, with these marijuana processing things, they have to give us all the detailed engineering stuff. And the engineering report always has a maintenance thing in here that says you have to check the seals and the pipes and there's a schedule you have to do it. The problem is, the way it works, planning issues their land use permit, building safety issues a building permit, they go out there and they make sure everything's built according to the plans, and then they have to issue that certificate of occupancy. After that, they have no legal ability to go back on that property. So nobody is making sure that this maintenance stuff is being followed. No one is making sure that that processor is checking his gaskets, his rings, his seals, etc. We want something added that we can make that part of our permit approval. And it wouldn't be, you know, I was talking to Mark, we tweak what's in front of you here, but basically we want it to say as part of the building permit or the planning thing that you submit to us verifying you're going to do this ongoing maintenance and that you're going to have the fire inspections, and then we'll give you your certificate of occupancy. Because
you're,
right now...
You're requesting that this just go forward with the previous board's intent, and I really feel like this is... I don't know how I don't remember this very clearly, but I remember the meatpacking discussion relative to industrial land or ag use and that sort of deal, that nexus. The commercial element, we don't allow... We allow meat packaging and processing and commercially zoned. It says rural commercial and community commercial zoned properties.
Right.
Community commercial is only in the North Valley, Berlin area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does not coincide with the intent that I thought this board had of allowing agriculture production on industrial land. I didn't know about this commercially processing stuff happening in.
Yeah, and it's in the consequence of something getting approved. And
that Taylor Sausage, they're meat packing right in downtown Cape Junction, correct?
But I will say this.
City limits.
Taylor's in the city, yeah.
The shop is, not the meat processing.
Yes. Well, and I will say this, too. So we pulled out the state codes on meat packaging and...
Processing is different
than
packaging.
Yeah, and...
Taylor's processes.
But this is meat packing. It said wherever we allow meat packing, we're going to allow the processing. Meat packaging and marijuana extraction and processing, or even lavender extraction and processing, completely different things.
They should only be allowed on industrial or agricultural in this, you know, rural.
And if that's, and I agree, we agree with you. But to make that happen, we need this order rescinded. The problem is you just have almost... You have basically have two
and
dozen.
Doing that. They're doing this because so they'll be grandfathered in after we finally make a decision on that.
No, well, they applied under good faith because that's what the code says.
What I would say is if there are opportunities to do this in infrastructure and facilities in commercially zoned properties, there isn't these facilities in industrials. I mean, look in your mind of where are these industrial buildings open for their processing activities. There's a shortage for everybody for industrial processes and facilities.
Well, what you find with these is you either build the building new, and that's what most people are doing. They're building a brand new building, or they're retrofitting a pole building, is what a lot of this is.
That's what we do with the sobering center. Yeah.
So, but anyways, we can't do anything about these applications out here. We're gonna have to authorize these in commercial zones, but we can stop it from happening further by rescinding the order.
I would challenge even approving them where they're at,
right?
They applied under good faith with the codes that were in the book.
I appreciate that, but at the same time, the board has the discretion.
There's a spirit of the law.
This order right now and say we're going to help you find other accommodations, but that's by sheer virtue of the application process. It isn't a given that you're going to be approved. So,
well, and some of them have... That's a Wally question, I think. You know, I've always been trained, you go by the rules in effect when you apply. But we could ask Wally about that. Some have gone through the site plan review and gotten that approval. None have gotten that building safety approval at this point because we're... The other component of it is they're supposed to have a fire inspection, annual fire inspections. And our fire chief, the state fire... So the fire marshal inspects commercial properties. These are considered commercial. He says he cannot... So he, of course, wants us to take that in a program.
He's choosing not to. He can. Our previous fire marshal did.
Right.
This one is trying to pick a fight.
So what we've done, so what you've seen here is talking about, you know, inspections, et cetera. If you're okay with us moving forward, we're going to clean that up, and it's just going to say they have to have proof it's going to be inspected. I don't care whether it's the fire marshal or who it is. We just want we want verification that they agree it's going to be inspected so the county is not liable if something happens to that building or those people.
The objections that you were talking about are the flash, which I would imagine some sort of combustion.
Yes.
You said they were using butane. You know,
butane, protein, propane, alcohol.
None of those elements should be allowed in the commercial zone.
Really?
We
it's been a process.
it's not that much different than a propane thing, and there's a propane dispensary right down there over on Rogue River Highway. I'm thinking about mechanical things if we're moving towards, you know, a mechanic shop and people are going to propane fueled vehicles. I don't know. It's like
a gallon of gas in your garage that you took to your lawnmower will blow the whole block flat.
You've got two gas dispensaries in Josephine County at the south end and the north end of town. That's where I buy my argon for welding, and there's bottles of tanks everywhere. You know, it's whether it's regulated.
Well, let me throw this out there too.
I'll tell you my concern, because I'm seeing it out there in Cave Junction, where the guy's got a paint booth, and you know who I'm talking about. He's got a paint booth. It's had an operating halon or whatever it is system in it for years and years and years, but that company is no longer in business. So therefore, now nobody is around that is a certified Acme halon system that can inspect it and say that it's truly working, other than pull the cork and see if it does its job. But because there's nobody in that certified that's carrying around that piece of paper, and so therefore this guy either puts in a whole brand new booth that they have to the tune of $60,000 because he can't get a fire marshal to say, I think, yeah, I've seen those work before and I think they'll work again. Nope. All of a sudden it's, all of a sudden nobody's certified to do anything. It's just like telling me, after all the years that I've worked on every brand of heat pump that there is, and it's going through my industry right now, you're not certified to work on a Lennox system. I said, no, I'm too smart to work on a Lennox system. And I can fix any one of them, but I'm not certified. I don't pay that $500 to Lennox and $500 to Bryant and $500 to Carrier, because that's, they all have their little card I've got to carry around. And that's what we're getting into with this stuff here. We've got all these, this guy gets an Acme, this guy gets a Paragon, this one gets a whatever. And now, who's the certified guy? Well, I bought it from Roseburg, and those people aren't in business anymore. Well, then you got to tear it all out because my fire marshal says no.
I'd like to clarify that this is extraction. This is a pressurized process of getting the oils and the items out of the marijuana, and this is not storage of tanks on property. This is the actual usage of those items, and there are great improvements in engineering to get it safer if people go through that right process. But if they don't, we had one, I mean, the Royal View Trailer Park had an explosion, and where they had one internally there and that trailer park explode. It can be volatile if unregulated.
And meth is the same way.
And I just want to throw this out there too for you. So, and I understand that, my understanding is our department didn't give much guidance to the board in the past, but I do want to say this. The way the quote is written, it says, if a use is allowed somewhere, that's where it has to go. That means you can't do it in any other zone. And if it's not listed somewhere, you find a similar use, and that's where you allow it to happen. I wasn't here, but I don't think the board perhaps didn't understand. Processing was listed for some other zones, and that's where it should have been directed. I think they were maybe just coming up with where it could be.
Because it wasn't the commercial zone at all. It was the industrial zone for production and processing of marijuana products. And it's like being from a meat processing standpoint was in that whole list of things. And I'm the one who referenced it. Was there isn't anything more, in my opinion, that could be potentially challenging for a neighborhood than meat processing from doing kills and the whole deal. That's out. That's permitted in the industrial use. We didn't talk about the commercial element. I don't know how this got in there. So that's what the reference was, in industrial production processing should be allowed on industrial zones. I don't remember doing anything on commercial.
If you're okay with it, I will bring it back to the workshop next week for discussion and possible action.
I think I would like
to. So if we're on,
if I'm right, we're not discussing the industrial side of it. That's where it was originally said it could go in industrial zone. But now you're looking at commercial, which opened this whole arena here, correct? Mm-hmm. And that, yeah.
So I'll bring that back to. And
I'd like
keep
to really define the concerns. So
okay.
We can make the order as it stands worked with certain elements. I agree that the rules on the books should be the rules on the books. You shouldn't be changing them halfway through the process. But I'd like to find a way to not go from you're allowed over here one day because you got it in, you're good to go, and now we're going to restrict it all out. It would be ideal to make whatever's on the books a little bit better to accommodate everybody having the same opportunity for marijuana processing in commercial zones. So maybe we limit it to you can't do these really crazy volatile elements in the commercial zone. That might have to be done somewhere else, but the majority of it can be done here. I don't know. Let's focus on maybe making what we have on the books better and work for everybody as opposed to a full 180-degree shift.
I'm very curious. Has Lily seen, Commissioner Morgan seems to know, basically, you've really gotten not into this industry, but like you've really sought out the knowledge, and that's neat. I'd like to. I would like to know more about it because it's.
I've seen the oil extraction on a hemp basis, but the principle is the same, and I don't see all of that. You know, maybe it's
people just trying to do it in their, not to the regulation that's causing the danger.
Home chemistry.
Correct. There are some companies that put out some good products that can keep it safe, including there's some across from that argon gas tank place to the right. That sells the industrial stuff to do it in a safer process. The problem is kind of like, do you process amphetamine pills in an industrial park and get a safe product, or do you make meth out of your home and you have a meth lab that's going to explode? So that's, I think, what's caused some of the volatility.
Was there a general discussion this afternoon?
I'm gone for Lipstick. I think there's nothing on the agenda.
I don't think there's anything on the agenda.
So we're not available, but maybe Monday? Do we know our
calendar? I'm going to be in town
Monday. Are you
what you're looking
at? I don't know my calendar.
While you're looking over, out in the industrial park where I have, right two doors down from the main office, there was a guy, and he just ran. He was the one that got popped out here in Merlin and finally burned himself up when he caught a fire. They came out there and wanted to know what was inside that building. And the DEA was there for 3 days. And they took out, they handpicked different bottles of stuff and beakers and jars of stuff. When they got all done, they said, okay, it's safe now. And he says, well, what do you mean safe? He goes, if something would have, two of those chemicals would have gotten together inside that building, it would have blown Walmart flat with the ground and everything in the surrounding area would not have been just with the roof blown and the windows blown out. He says, I'm saying it would have blown this whole section of town flat with the ground. That's how volatile
it is. I need to go to the 911.
And he says, but you're okay now. We went,
Where am I down? Advisory.
Okay.
The
and then we had to get rid of the stuff. And that was
airport
tough, getting rid of the, what was remaining, because we couldn't even pronounce
it.
It
starts at 4:30 in O'Brien.
Company out of Ben.
So it's just half my afternoon.
The same thing here. You can't take the leftover product and
it's
put it in garbage.
So I have to wait to freeze it. You can get there by 4:30.
Hazardous waste.
And it can still flame up.
They need it regardless. But yeah, but I was going
to
miss Monday anyhow.
We need to know more about
budget that starts at...
Thank you.
5:30. But I had a medical at 1:30 that I can cancel.
I'd like to see us if we can meet at 3 o'clock. And I'd like to see the IV airport being canceled and the manager is not there. There's no oversight for open public meeting law. I wouldn't want the Parks Advisory Board's meeting when Sarah isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be an understanding. We don't hold advisory committee meetings. The Rural Planning Commission would not meet without Ms. Spencer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not appropriate. A bunch of guys can get together and talk, but it's not a meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we need to send that out to. Well, the problem is I don't have a means of emailing any of them.
Well, Barbara can do it.
Okay. I will send her an email asking her to notify those.
That frees up the afternoon. We could still maybe do a 1:30 appointment. We're looking at a general discussion at 3 o'clock on Monday.
For this item.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe it wouldn't be done by 3, but I would
3 o'clock on Monday.
Workshops are more casual.
Okay.
When you can get there.
I think I'm okay.
I'll see if I can move it up. But it's also the elected luncheon, so I don't know how long those go. I haven't been to one.
You'll be done by 1:30 to make your appointment.
Okay.
So they start pretty much on time.
Okay, so we're going to 3 p.m.
General discussion.
General discussion. We now, okay, yeah, I can do that.
Canceling the 2 o'clock discussion this afternoon.
And that cancels today?
Yeah.
taken
care
of.
Well, I don't think you guys are available. So
I probably could be, but if we go to Monday, I'm great.
Okay, great. Let's just do that.
Okay, I'm going to quick running through these real quick. Number two, code updates. Just so you know, we're still waiting on all those pending amendments that cause a lot of problems in our office. People, growers are a little upset. They've waited to try and do the right thing. They still don't have rules.
Fix this year anyway. Codes take 90 days just like an ordinance. So that's your answer. The reason the board is delayed is part of it was this question. We would not have made this growing size as much as you had worked to try to get these in front of us in a timely fashion. That at least, it's not 90 days, it's 90 days from implementation. There's a hearing process of going through it that would have taken 2 months, and we just don't have the time within our schedule right now. So that's a 5-month schedule for those implementations, and they wouldn't have been for this growing season anyway. It's a 5-month process to get those done.
Yeah, I we had the hearings on it. It was moving those ordinances forward for the first and second reading and then the 90 days. But so just so you understand, it has caused some issues out there. But the hearings officer, again, is on hold because Wally said that you wanted it on hold. So you're going to have appeals coming forward to you because weren't able to move that hearings officer amendment forward.
I don't know either. I thought actually we have the ability to just put an order and allow hearings officers.
Well, so the previous board came up with what they wanted in the code. I actually crafted it. DLCD approved what I was sending. It was ready to go to notice, and Wally said, hold on, we have other changes. And so everything's on hold waiting your changes.
I don't know
the changes. Okay. So then, just so you know, fence setbacks, that's still something you think you need to address coming up here pretty quick. We talked about the DLCD audit for the code. I just want to let you know that we are... Two other parts of that are having a consultant go through the remainder of the code then, and we have $10,000 in the budget right now to have him strip out all the fluff, all the extra timelines, all the extra stuff we're requiring people to do, and then budgeted for next budgets, or the next year, is $5,000 to then add in those uses the state now allows that we do not in our code.
Okay. A quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I was under the understanding after we had the hearing in February that we were going forward with some of those items.
Right.
And then some were waiting for the May ballot.
Correct.
And then we brought it up the other day, and the question was, no, everything was waiting.
We had an order from the previous board that chartered all of those to be under a marijuana thing, and we were supposed to work that out. I'm going to have to move to Arthur because I've got to be on that call at 11 o'clock. And we do have an opportunity to discuss this. And I think I should re-emphasize the legal that they need to come back with that understanding.
Even if it started as marijuana, when we as a board came in and had that hearing that day, we said, take this portion, go forward.
Yeah.
We'll revisit this later, and nothing moved forward.
Yeah, I think there were 18 text amendments, and we just... through them all, we said, okay, some of these just go along with each other. They don't have anything to do with them. The whole thing, we were trying to shoot a shotgun, and I think we really need to narrow our target down and take things a couple at a time. And I think that was met with the public saying, yeah, I think you're right, instead of trying to do it all at once.
Right. They were supposed to go to the next meeting, and then the next meeting you had a schedule, and but none of that happened. Just real quick, we do have updated marijuana brochures in case anybody wants them. So.
Thank you.
Please read the rest of it because the other stuff is really
absolutely.
The other stuff is regarding taking care of squatters, the cat house, the pallet house, those unsafe structures.
I'm loving it.
We don't have codes on the book that allow us to turn them down. We can if we adopt them.
Okay, Sheriff and I talked about that also last night. Thank you, Julie.
Bye. Thanks.
Most enlightening. The main thing I would like to ask is for the board to move the Moss Adams audit contract to the Wednesday business session for approval. So that's my main focus here for finance.
Sounds good.
Sound good? Do you want to hear any background issue on that? I mean, we went out for RFP.
Contract, or are we in
it's,
for
a, it's an annual contract with a 3-year, if they perform, if they meet our specifications. And then it also has a 3-year extension option. So at the end of the first 3 years, we have another option to extend for another.
Do an annual audit of
correct.
Finances?
This is the annual financial audit.
Because that was asked last night at Tacoma. Are
yes.
you guys under audit all the time? Because we
correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. We have this the...
We have several audits, frankly. Okay. I mean, we not only have the annual financial audit, we also have the single audit, which is focused in on federal contracts, federal funds. We also have the state audit, specifically for public health, where they come down every 3 years and do a triennial audit. And then, of course, IT and the sheriff folks just had their CJIS.
Could you give me a list of those so I can just use it for talking points?
Every 3 years, you have a mental health audit as well.
And mental health, yeah.
I would like a list of those audits so I can use them for talking points because it comes up at our forums.
Okay.
Oversight is a big deal for the public. Really big deal.
Now, if we, for purposes of the levy, if the levy passes or when the levy passes, we will also then have an additional audit that will be specific for the levy funds, which is one of the things that we've said in our...
One thing that came up last night was Citizens Oversight, a Citizens Oversight Committee for the levy.
I have concerns on that kind of a...
In the kitchen?
Well, and their capacity, their expertise, their knowledge, their background.
And one more group to oversee.
Their expertise.
I wonder if you could use the Budget Committee as that special hearing to review the allocation of the...
Yeah, I think we have something already in place and an auditor's report.
Yeah, and that could be brought then to the Budget Committee.
The report will be public knowledge.
Yeah, I think putting it in context to the number of audits that we already facilitate would be really good to say we facilitate 6 audits.
And right now at this stage of the game, everybody's excited and, I want to be on that committee. And then when you actually do it, you have...
Yeah,
4 members and 1 shows up.
Oh, and there was a citizens advisory. The sheriff had a citizens advisory board.
Previous sheriff,
correct. There were issues there.
Correct. Yeah.
As far as
confidentiality elements that those people don't, he doesn't have the authority to give out the DOP style stuff and make it non-confidential.
So you were saying?
Well, it's just one of those things that, one, we can initiate different boards, but there are stipulations.
The previous sheriff gave out a copy of the EOP to his sheriff's advisory committee, and then he was instructed by legal that that is not in his purview to give up. This is a confidential document. And then he had to go get it and Russell it back. It gets into sticky stuff.
But I think if we can satisfy the state, well, how do I find this out? We say through budget.
Mm-hmm.
And a copy of the audit, because we on the fact sheet we said we'll be audited annually.
Yeah. Maybe that's something that we can include in this contract, is the fact that they will pay special attention to outside funding areas that we would dictate need to be...
Well, I talked to them, to Moss Adams, specifically about the levy and the potential for an audit, and they actually... They're the auditors for Lane County. They do that for the Lane County levy.
So they have a format they can
use. Yes.
I can speak to that. We can move it on to the administrative for this new vendor.
Right. It's 51,000. It's within 1% of our current contract, and so it's a good deal.
We don't have a general discussion this afternoon, so could we do other? I have this letter on the Senate Bill 3 that Commissioner Morgan and I reviewed last night. It hadn't changed other than the date when we thank you.
Well, I didn't get a chance to read that, so I will as soon as we get done here.
Yeah,
but one thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if now's the time, I don't think we have a real strict procedure in place for instance, background checks for badged and officers.
I agree.
It was brought to my attention that. Some hires happened in the animal side of it, and the sheriff is asked to swear them in, but the sheriff didn't get to run a background check. I think we've got something backwards there. I think the background check should be at they come in the door, and then they're qualified to do something else.
HR can do a preliminary, but honestly, a full law enforcement background needs to be done before anybody is sworn in.
The sheriff does his own background checks that's separate from HR.
But it's animal control officers.
They're not under the sheriff's
office. He has to deputize them.
So they shouldn't have to do the same kind of background check that anybody else has to swear in.
But HR has not done that.
That's where we're not
doing. HR doesn't do that, and they could. But all of the sheriff's deputies, I understand, are given the background check that the sheriff does. The county, the HR doesn't do those. Different version.
I can tell you from coming from Community Corrections, where we're under those same guidelines for the background, we had to battle with HR to take them to the level that we needed to. And what's happening right now is the people are being...
You don't have to battle HR, and so you say, because you're animal control, that that's the level that they're going to be done at, and it should...
But they hired the people and then asked the sheriff to swear them
in
without having that been done. And they're telling him he cannot do that background now because they're already hired.
That's not true.
Okay, well, that's the issue. So we need clarification, I think, between HR and the sheriff, because the sheriff feels very uncomfortable. He's not going to do it. And now you got to go back and tell the guy why not.
You have two separate liaisons to two separate departments. Mm-hmm. I'm the liaison to HR. So I can go to HR and I can say, we will do this at this level.
Stop hiring ACOs without them.
These employees are in a probationary period. They have been extended an opportunity to be hired.
I think HR sees that differently.
And I don't have any problems with our time.
Okay.
So who needs to edit this so that we can assign
it? Both of you.
But there's a handwritten.
Oh.
Yeah, that's...
You're not doing that. We're just going to put edits. I will get it done.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
I just want to read it.
When you're done with it,
read it, initial, and we can go.
And we'll get it done.
You better hurry.
My morning opened up.
Do it in the morning.
Yeah.
And you've got something you're doing?
On Wednesday?
Yeah, in the morning. So
yeah.
That's fine. We'll handle all this stuff. And we'll go over the agenda creation later on this afternoon. So that.
You canceled this afternoon?
Are we off? Are we adjourned?
We will be if you guys are ready.
I'm ready.
10:58, the board is adjourned. Thank you so much.